coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello everybody, and happy Tuesday night. So glad to be right here with you. So glad to be back home. Nice few weeks on the road, isn't bad. Keeps me in shape, keeps me doing things. Hey, road family, hope y'all are well tonight. Man, we've had some fun conversations over the last few weeks. We got into some Knights Templar, the UFO whistleblower stuff. Make sure to go by and check out Tyler Roberts, folks. His show, Total Disclosure, is fantastic. And he has been working hard with the International UFO Bureau, getting things up and running over there. So congrats to our friends over there for finally getting their reporting system up, everything else. Stop on by and check them out, folks, internationalufobureau.com. Our guest in the second segment tonight is our good friend Billy Joe Kane, as well as his wife. For the first time, as you know, we speak about Jacqueline all the time on the show, and the fact that they began Radical Empathy Education Foundation together, and she really is behind the scenes a lot with it. But we get together tonight, actually here in studio, and talk about the roots of abuse, narcissism, how people come to be human trafficked, you know, how people come to join cults, all kinds of things. This narcissistic means by which people control others, and we'll be talking a lot about that through a song from the movie Hunchback of Notre Dame from Disney. So it's pretty interesting how the lyrics of that song literally lay out the way that somebody controls another person's mentality and makes them think that that is a normal, healthy, good thing. So we'll be getting into that in the second part. Our guest in the first part is our good friend Vicki Joy Anderson. She is the author of They Only Come Out at Night. Her website is VickiJoyAnderson.com. We will be talking with her tonight about dark entities, shadow people. This is one of my favorite topics, Vicki, because it is something that has literally happened in my life when it comes to paranormal experience. The experience of the old hag and shadow people is one that has definitely impacted me. Like I had a shadow person actively grab me and start climbing on top of me. And it was one of the most frightening experiences of my life. I know it was tied to sleep paralysis. But it's still one of those, like, I experienced that. And it shook me to the core when it happened. What brought you down the path of researching this topic to begin with, Vicki?
Yeah, well, first of all, Chris, thanks for having me back. It's been a while. I missed
you.
So thanks for having me again. And, so it wasn't really by choice, even though I never in a million years anticipated that I would be researching or writing about this topic. It's been a part of my life probably since day one. I can pinpoint the first beginning to end sleep paralysis experience I had at about 4 or 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
I remember because we were living in a house in Willow Grove, Pennsylvania, and it was the 70s. So I had my olive green shag carpet in my bedroom that year, right? So I can trace it back to then, because my first experience that was memorable from beginning to end was in this room. And it was an out of body version. Because I had leapt out of my bed, or so I thought, and was running towards my door to, you know, run down the hall and get my mom and dad. And all I remember is this little girl is looking at my bare feet with the green shag carpet, you know, coming up through my toes. And I got to the door, and the door was closed, which I think was unusual back then, because I would sleep with my room open, so I could, because the hall light would be left on for me and my brother. And so even from that early experience, there were some glitches. I always tell people that you have to have a little bit of a totem, like to quote Inception. You can usually tell, even when you think you're awake in your bedroom, you can't always tell, because I think that they have a way of doing a screen memory there, and there's usually a glitch. There's usually a glitch. There's something off in the room. Not a lot of things. It'll be like one thing. But I do believe that the experiences started before then, because I also remember at an earlier date telling my mom that I was afraid of the shadows on my wall. And the reason I remember this at such a young age is the moonlight was coming in through my bedroom. And my mom said, no, those are just shadows of the trees outside. And she did this little experiment with me where in the moonlight she would put something and make a shadow puppet on the wall. And then I had to guess what it was. And so I just remember my little black patent leather Sunday school shoe. And I remember it going up against the wall and saying, it's my shoe. And she did like two or three things until I could guess. And I went to bed very pacified and made sense to me. And yet in retrospect, many, many years later, I looked back and thought, I wonder what shadows I was really talking about at 3 years old. And then if you go back even earlier, I have a memory of when we lived in Virginia. And I remember, again, I remember this because it was like a funny story between my mom and I. I remember telling her I was afraid of the dark. And she said, you don't have to be afraid because the angels are watching over you. And I was so young, I had no idea what an angel was. This was probably the first time I'd heard that word. And I said, well, what's an angel? And because she explained it to me in two-year-old terms, she said, they're big, they're bright, and they're everywhere. So she failed to explain to me that they were invisible. So when she left, I guess I've always been a doubting Thomas. I was like, well, I don't see anything big, bright, and everywhere. So I decided to do some exploration, and I hopped up on one of my pieces of furniture, and I looked out my window, and outside of my window, this was in Fairfax, Virginia, there were large kind of those street lights that would bend over and kind of had a War of the Worlds eyeball on the end. Yeah. And they were all the way up and down both sides of the street. And I thought, well, that must be the angels. They're big, they're bright, and they're all the way up and down the street. And so I very naively thought I was safe because they were all parked outside my door. So I think it was going on probably my whole life. And everything else is, you know, speculation. But these shadow people, the nightmares, I didn't understand a lot of it, Chris. In fact, I haven't really fully understood a lot of it, even since the book came out, and having conversations with people such as yourself and getting to have these conversations with other people has really filled in a lot of color and connected a lot of dots. So I knew that there was something a little more than nightmares. Again, at 5 years old, our culture and our worldview will color how we define these experiences. Yes. And because I was a little girl who went to Sunday school every Sunday, I knew about Jesus and I knew about the devil, and that was probably about it, right? And I remember distinctly believing that these dreams had something to do with the devil, probably because when I instinctively called on Jesus to help me, it would stop. So I assumed this is his enemy, not mine, right? Sure. And so I don't think I had any concept at that point of a demon or any sort of like fallen angels or anything like that. So, and I do remember even as young as 5 years old, having the wherewithal to articulate to my mother at the breakfast table, hey, Mom, I had another one of those dreams last night. I didn't say I had a bad dream last night. I said I had another one of those dreams. And even at 5 years old, I thought that they were unusual because it was a heightened sense of terror than from an average bad dream. And I had some sort of sense that the devil had something to do with it. But even more so, I would recognize that I couldn't figure out if I was awake or asleep. And I would recognize, coincidentally, if it was a dream and I was just dreaming, why did the reality of the room always line up? Like I was always wearing the pair of pajamas that I was really wearing. And I, you know what, Chris, as an adult, it blows my mind to know that as a five-year-old, I was observing things like that.
Yeah.
And that my brain was concluding things and piecing things together. And I think, you know, when you get to be my age and older, you're so far flung from being that young. You just assume that kids are silly and uneducated and stupid and don't know anything about the world yet. But when I look back into how I was analyzing and interpreting what that exactly was, I'm blown away that a five-year-old brain was concluding some of the things that I was concluding even way back then.
Well, you know, it's because your gut doesn't really steer you wrong, Vicky. You know, it's something that we talk about in the pre-record section coming up with our guest, you know, like when it doesn't matter what term you have for a part of your body, you know, when something icky has happened to you.
Yes.
And obey that and know that you're right in feeling icky. Doesn't matter what anybody else says. Your base feeling is right. And yeah, you know, like my first experiences with, I guess, a shadow person would be what I would consider to be my sighting of the devil when I was a very young child. I was four or 5 years old, possibly even a little bit younger. But I distinctly remember a shadowy being out near our swing set beckoning me to come outside.
Wow.
And being afraid to the core of my being. Of what that thing was, to me it literally looked like the quintessential devil, like the devil from A Can of Ham. Like it had horns, a tail, things like that. I can't say as we were hugely religious at the time or attending church. Like later, I mean, I studied as a seminarian for the Catholic Church later, so I definitely became very close to God. And there is that aspect of, yes, whenever you choose that line of service, other things don't really mind being around you. And they kind of want to be around you to keep you from doing that service. But even my shadow person experience of the one climbing on top of me, I was going through a lot of things in my life at that time. I was getting over some addiction. I was getting ready to move away to help myself with a lot of things. And I actively have kind of brought that back to the point of, I think it was almost more like a primordial me. Like the me that I had manifested that wasn't actually me, but was doing these horrible things. And wanted to keep doing these base and horrible things. You know, so it was almost like a split version of me that was trying to hold on and stay there. And something that I fully gave my consent to, you know?
Yeah, that's so fascinating that you would say that, Chris, because one of the things I started coming to terms with a lot later, probably in my 30s, was... And I'm not meaning this in the literal sense. I don't want people to think that this is dissociation or DID or anything like that. But what I'm saying is I got to the point where I didn't really know who the real me was. I hadn't really dealt with any of the childhood trauma, which for me was all the sleep paralysis, but also the bullying. I had a lot of surgeries. Those are pretty scary when you're a kid and, you know, you're getting needles and, you know, all that stuff. So, what happened was I've got this life that I was raised in, you know, going to church every Sunday. And I followed that all the way, Chris, through adulthood. I went to a Bible college and I majored in Bible and in got my bachelor's in writing. But what started really confusing me in my 20s, but I really didn't have answers until my 30s, is I felt like I had this split personality, exactly like what you're just talking about. This is so fascinating that you brought it up, because I don't think I've ever discussed this aspect of the sleep paralysis before. But there is this identity crisis you go through if you were raised in a religious home and you have a biblical perspective of this is demonic. These shadow entities or demons or fallen angels or Nephilim or whatever you want to call it. But these experiences, if you're experiencing them on a regular basis over the course of decades, all throughout childhood, puberty, teens, young adult, it shapes to a large degree who you are. And what I found with a lot of us who go through this, that because we become so convinced on a deep subconscious level that we're cowards because we have so much fear when these experiences happen, that it almost in order to convince ourselves that we aren't wimps, we become adrenaline junkies. And so a lot of us are into the roller coasters and the bungee jumping and the horror movie and the heavy metal concerts and things like that, because we want to prove to people that we can come face to face with these things that are evil and dark and ugly. And we like it and we're not scared. Right.
Yeah.
And so then what ends up happening is you have this almost identity crisis where now your music, your media, your entertainment, your friends, your clothing, everything is this dark persona. But then you still have this belief that you grew up with, that these core values and these biblical values. And so then I started to question, like, well, which one really is the real me? Now, I wasn't a total hypocrite, Chris. I was not leading a double life. I wasn't acting one way around my church friends and another way around my friends. I was pretty much, because I was so antisocial, I wasn't into the party scene or anything. I just didn't like being around people, right? But I kind of came to this conclusion, like, which one is me? Is it the heavy metal Vicky that, you know, has got all the, like, sarcasm dripping from her mouth and can't be nice to anybody and never smiles and dresses in all black? Or is it, am I this person that was raised with biblical values? Which one's the liar? Which one's true? And I struggled with that in my 20s and my 30s. And it wasn't until I started dealing with the actual trauma that I went through with the surgeries and the bullying and the rejection, when I started really dealing with all the stuff that I had just swept under the carpet, I was able to come into my real identity. And at that point, I decided, hey, you know what? My name is Vicky Joy. It means victorious spirit. It means joyful. I want to be a victor in this. I want to come out stronger from this. And I don't want to be a victim. And when I came through and I worked through the trauma and I was able to get over the regrets and the time that I wasted and forgiving the people who hurt me and were mean to me and, you know, giving up all the grudges. When I worked through that, I realized, okay, you know what? The real me isn't this heavy metal Vicky that listens to all the death metal. That's the armor that I had on. That was the protective armor I had on to kind of ward people off. If I kind of felt like if I can look and dress and act as ugly and broken as possible, people will leave me alone. The goody two shoes people won't bug me, you know? And so it, I'd say it took me about 40 years to work all that stuff out, Chris. It's a very confusing tug of war between the fallen nature and the part of your nature that wants to be victorious.
Absolutely. And it does take a lot of that, once again, coming to terms with self. You know, one of the things that I talk about regularly on this show, and even whenever I talk with other people, I'm a huge anxiety sufferer. Like, I went to a panic doctor for a while, things like that. And the one thing that you always have and maintain is your consent.
Yes.
And as soon as you recognize that you are going down that path, you can revoke your consent from that anxiety. You don't have to worry about it. Your anxiety is utterly unfounded. It's something you're worrying about, something that you have zero control over anyway, 95% of the time. You know, so like you can revoke your consent from that system. And it's a huge relief when you learn that, like, wow, I can actively not give a damn. Like, I can let my give a damn break and that's okay.
Yes, I love it.
You know, it's pretty fascinating when you start. But so much of these things are self-imposed on ourselves.
Yes.
They are self-fulfilling prophecies that lead us down roads of darkness, that keep us in paths and tunnels of darkness. And the sad thing is, our brain is literally programmed to learn from negative reinforcement. Like, that's why the military works so well. That's why it's like, you want to straighten a kid up, throw him in the military. That negative reinforcement of, oh, yeah, hit the deck, give me 20.
Oh, yeah.
Teaches you real quick that you are not in charge. There's something else. There's something bigger than you. You are just a cog in a machine.
Yeah.
You know, and once you learn that, and once you accept that, you take on a different power within yourself to handle things in that kind of way. But it's hard. And that world of negativity that we all live in, that we're almost encouraged to live in, Vicky, can be all encompassing. And it's more powerful than positivity is the sad thing.
It is. And there is a... There is almost a type of grooming going on with these dark entities that come over and over and over and over and over and over again.
That's exactly what Nathaniel Gillis says.
Okay. Oh, I can't wait to talk to him.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because here's what happens is this is just the way our culture is, right? If you go to church and you believe all that Bible stuff and you went to Bible college and, you know, you're not a party girl... You're boring, and you know you're boring, right? Because that's the label that's put on that. And there's something just titillating about thinking, these entities, I know they don't care about me, and my best interest is not at their heart. But why did they choose me? There's all these other people, and they're not bothering them. And maybe I do have some sort of gift, and maybe this is what was so difficult, Chris, especially when you're young and you're still in elementary, junior high, and high school, where it's a dog eat dog world. And it's all about who's popular and who's pretty, who's athletic, who's getting the dates. When you can't compete in that world because you have, you know, got a birth defect and you're having a surgery every summer and you're coming back to school with stitches still on your face.
Yeah.
Nobody's asking you to homecoming. Okay. And so you realize there's no way that anyone is ever going to seek me out and think that I am special or beautiful outside of my own mom and dad. And so when all of a sudden you have supernatural beings who are intrigued with you, even if you're somewhat frightened of them and they don't have your best interests at heart and they're not even nice to you, there is a sense of someone sees me.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting. I love the story where Hagar is sent out of Abraham's home, and her and her son Ishmael are in the wilderness to die. And God shows himself, saves her life, saves the life of Ishmael, makes him into a mighty nation. But the name that he chose to reveal to Hagar in that moment was, I'm the God who sees. And I've heard so many people who've gone through trauma, where they didn't have a good family life, where their parents didn't love them, or they never knew their parents, or they were given up for adoption, or like they never felt loved. You'll often hear people say, I was never seen. And I think there's a deep, deep intrinsic desire in all of us, whether it's a parent or a spouse or a best friend. We all want one person in the world who sees us and knows everything about us and still cares about us and thinks we're special and thinks we're cool. And when you live in a world that's never going to think who you are is cool because you're not pretty enough, you're not sexy, you're religious, you know, whatever, but then you've got a supernatural being that is noticing you. The lure is so strong. Chris, this is the whole draw over the obsession with the Twilight series. You've got a whole bunch of girls in junior high and high school who aren't the popular ones, and they sit at home and they fantasize and hear someone like, hey, it's no longer good enough for the cutest boy in school to like me. The way I have to get my value is something supernatural is paying attention to me. And so it is this kind of it's a catch-22. It's a form of double-mindedness.
Sure.
You know these things aren't out there to get you, but you start to identify with it because it's like, hey, this is my family. These are the people that appreciate me. They notice me.
Yeah.
They're telling me I have gifts and they're doing all this stuff. And so all of a sudden you start to take on the outward appearance of these things. And that's where you get all the cliche black hair dye and the black nail polish and mm-hmm. the metal t-shirts and all that. And where I was constantly at odds with myself is I was hanging around with all of those types of people, but it wasn't who I really was. And when you have a whole bunch of broken people congregating together and what they have in common is the brokenness.
Yeah.
You can't love each other. You can't help each other out. You're both trapped down the deep hole. No one's helping each other out of that. And so I was constantly running into these, like becoming best friends with girls as broken as me. And it would just lead into one backstabbing, ghosting, rejection after another. And when you're on this merry-go-round, Chris, whether it's broken marriages or broken friendships, when you're constantly just on this merry-go-round of rejection, there is a point where you reach a breaking point and you just can't pick yourself up from it one more time. And that's the place that I got at 40. The final straw that broke the camel's back was my mom passing away. So this unconditional, someone who's known me since the day I was born, she was gone.
Yeah.
And I thought at this point, I have a choice to make. I can fall down a dark, dark hole and I can continue to identify with brokenness and loneliness and rejection. Or I can do the really, really, really hard work of pulling myself out of this pit and being victorious. And I don't always tell this part of the story, but I've been called Vic my whole life. You know, I'm from Minnesota. We put you down to the one syllable. You know, if you're Christopher, you're Chris.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're Victoria, you're Vic. And my birth name is Vicky Joy. It wasn't originally going to be my name. My mom was going to name me Kelly. And when I was born, she specifically called me Vicky Joy because she knew that the two things I would need to survive is a victorious spirit and joy. And I never
Beautiful.
Had it, Chris. And I didn't have it up until the time that she died. And I went into a very, very, very dark place when she died. And I think to coin the biblical phrase, I was probably being sifted like wheat. I think the devil was just waiting for this opportunity. All the planets aligned and I was just... kick me when I'm down. And I got through that time. It took me several years and it was a pretty close call. And after I got through that, I started going by Vicky Joy because I thought it's taken me 45 years to come into this name and I'm claiming it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, understanding what that means for you and what consenting into that system of joy means.
Yes.
Which is a huge step. And, you know, especially when you're talking dark entities, things like that. Once again, the idea that even the shadow person that was with me, I firmly believe was me or a projection of me, a projection of something that I had helped create and help manifest. You know, through those dark thoughts, through those dark habits, other things, just lying, deceiving, what have you. So, that can definitely manifest into the world. I mean, there are numerous stories that talk about it when you start getting into the idea of tulpas from Buddhist tradition, when you start getting into the idea of the golem. From Jewish tradition, this thing that is basically created to serve the purpose of somebody, to serve the means of somebody's will, and even the idea of an egregor, you know, a force that is brought about by mass consciousness. That was one of the things that Wes Craven actually talked about regularly. Was that he believed that when he wrote A Nightmare on Elm Street, that the fear that it created and the verve behind it the actual excitement behind the movie and the fandom and things like that helped birth the Night Stalker, and that there was like something that took this dude over to make him go commit these killings that he had been a part of helping create. And that's a fascinating concept when you start thinking about it, Vicky. The idea, and you know, when you start looking at specifically Hebrew tradition, especially the traditions of Kabbalah, and the idea of speaking things into being in the Bible, we uniquely amongst creation were breathed life into by that creative breath. By the breath that spoke the universe into being. So we have the power of speaking things into being. And it's pretty fascinating when you start going down that rabbit hole and seeing the fact of like, yes, we may well be creating a lot of these dark entities ourselves.
Yeah. That I really love the way that you worded that, because even in doing research for writing the book, I was reading a lot on the doppelganger theories, you know, and just based on the research that I was writing, it sounded to me in a lot of cases like the people were trying to come up with an alternate explanation. And what I'm hearing now as you're talking about it, because you're articulating it in a way that connects to my brain. And I think for the first time, I'm understanding now. I know what they mean by that, you know, and I think what's important to understand, and I wish more people could figure this out. I kind of think it's common sense, but humanity is too complicated for there to be one cookie cutter explanation for everyone. And when you're talking about sleep paralysis and who's targeted and why and what their experience looks like, this idea that every single person is having the same experience for the same reason, we have to understand that just like everything, whoever's behind these episodes, they're not all being driven by the same people for the same reasons. And so my experience might be different than yours, but that doesn't mean yours isn't valid or that mine isn't valid. And that in some cases, I love what you're saying here about this kind of doppelganger that we're sort of manifesting out of our own, you know,
primordial self.
Yeah.
Literally.
And when you look at all of the different sleep paralysis sort of angles, you've got the typical classic sleep paralysis, but you've got the UFO abductees that sometimes that comes out of sleep paralysis, totally different agenda, you know, same corporation, but compartmentalized departments. Right. And, but now we know that there's militarized versions of this. There is now technology that can do this. And so as a community of experiencers in sleep paralysis, look, we're already marginalized as experiencers. We're already gaslit by every group imaginable. The church doesn't want to acknowledge the supernatural. Science, it's all narcolepsy. It's trauma. It's, sleep apnea. It's a mental illness. You're schizophrenic. Like we already are hard pressed to find anyone to think we're not crazy or just attention seeking or making it up. And really the only full support we are going to get is from one another. So if we're a divided community where if my sleep paralysis experience doesn't look exactly like yours, then I'm making it up or I'm stupid or I don't know what I'm talking about. At least we need to be unified as a group. And we just have to understand that not all sleep paralysis experiences are alike. And
absolutely.
Now, Chris, with the stuff coming out now, with some of the tech and the dream warfare and the, you know, gone are going to be the days where everybody has a similar story. A shadow person came and sat on my chest and I couldn't breathe. And it's getting crazier by the day with the tech and the frequencies and all the different things coming out. So we have to at least remain open-minded and supportive within our own community, because depending upon your age or your background or your bloodline or who is targeting you and why, our experiences are not all going to look alike. And we have to come to grips with the fact that there might be different versions of this. And there might be someone out there who has had a really far out, unique sleep paralysis experience like you've never heard before. And it doesn't mean they're lying or they're making it up or that they read it on Reddit somewhere. We just have to be, I think, a little bit more supportive because nobody else outside of the community is really going to be supportive.
These things, and literally sleep paralysis, like the concept of it, Vicky, is there is so much connective tissue, so much when you're talking out-of-body experience, past life experience, when you're talking, near-death experience.
NDEs, yep,
like,
yep.
All of these things are so closely tied.
Yeah,
and
yes.
It's fascinating when you say, like, I practice remote viewing. And one of the things that I bring up regularly whenever I talk on shows about my binaural beat music I make, whatever, it's like we go through about a third of our waking existence, if not a little bit more, in a state of rote hypnosis. You mm-hmm. are not thinking while you're driving to work. You're reacting mm-hmm. to the world around you, but you are not currently thinking of drive the vehicle, hands at 10 and 2, gas pedal, brake. Like, you are not thinking about that. It's an autonomous thing that happens till you get near your exit, which is why frequently you're like, oh man, I'm here already?
Yeah.
Things like that. Like, we go into other states of reality regularly. And a frequency is not just what we hear or a color that we see. It's also a thought form.
Mm.
So when you can get to the point that your brain is trained to repeat a frequency, repeat a thought form, to get to that point, It's a different level of control. It's a different level of connection,
yeah.
You know, and when you start understanding that you may be living in an alternate reality on the regs, these
yeah.
worlds of, whether you're talking aliens, spirits, what have you, we right now, you and I, by all known physics, Vicky, are sharing an electron shell.
Hmm.
We are 90% empty space, bound together by a quantum field, you know, like that.
Yeah.
That's actual physics.
Yeah.
So the idea that this reality is even real to begin with, or that we aren't just having a shared illusion. Once I vibrate one octave higher, I will shed this mortal coil and go into the adjoining reality.
Yeah.
Call it heaven, call it whatever, but that's where the next frequency leads you, is the next dimension, not
yeah.
this one.
Yeah.
You know, so the idea of these things being right there just shifted. All your brain has to do is lock into a frequency for a little while for that to be there, for it to be
right.
physically present.
Yeah. Yeah, this is so fascinating. I just love the direction that this conversation is going, because it's taken twists and turns that the average conversation on sleep paralysis doesn't take and needs to take.
It does.
And
it does.
Here's a rabbit hole I've been down the last only like week or two. Okay. I had said something on a previous podcast where we were talking about astral projection and astral abductions. And
yeah.
I said something about, yeah, and then when you get lost in the mall, I hate that mall. And so somebody sent me a DM on Instagram saying, yeah, Vic, have you heard of the mall world? And I'm like, oh, don't tell me there's a whole name for this, right? So went on Reddit and I started reading on the mall world, and I couldn't believe that all of these recurring, so a recurring dream is, it's the exact same dream,
sure.
same character, same script, whatever.
Yep.
But this mall world, it's a recurring location. But every time you're there, you're not necessarily with the same people or having the same
okay.
experience at all. So it's, I didn't realize that all of these recurring locations were actually part of one world. And so it
Ooh.
Wasn't just the mall dream, the hotel dream, the airport dream, because they all had this thing in common. You get there and you're lost, and the spatial things are all off. So you might be standing on something that is a foot off the ground, and then all of a sudden you realize it's 100 foot off the ground, and things take shape, or you backtrack. and you retrace your steps, and then the things that were there before are missing. So it's just this like a morphing place.
Sure.
So I'm reading on the mall world, and a lot of people seem to be under the impression, and I think that there's probably a lot of truth to this, that the mall world could be a shared space. It probably predates the back rooms, and that the mall world is likely a simulation. Now, this makes sense because a lot of people that are there do feel like they're being observed, or they're being tested, or they're being trained, or they have an assignment.
Construct in the Matrix.
Exactly. So I'm actually absolutely believe that part of this could be a simulation. But then I started morphing this with other research. What if, because we don't know what dreams are.
Sure.
The smartest guy out there doesn't really know. What if these mall world experiences are elaborate screen memories to distract us, to keep us occupied, to keep us zoned out in rote hypnosis, as you said? I love that phrase. What if when we wake up, we don't remember being on the metal table? What if we don't remember the grays? What if we don't remember the pentagram or the black robes? All we remember is being lost in this mall world. But what if it was just a screen memory? And there's massive implications for a lot of people in this, because there are people that are getting dragged into the mall world against their will. And they go lucid once they're there, and they say, oh, no, not the damn mall again. I hate this place. But fortunately, because I had the dream 100 times before, I now know how to get out of the mall. So you've got the people that are getting pulled in there unwittingly. But just a theory here, Chris, this is just amusing. Yeah. Let's say the mall world isn't a back room or a shared space or a simulation. What if it's a screen memory? Which means when we dream that we're in the mall world, something more nefarious or sinister happened, and that mall world is our way of dissociating from whatever is really happening. Now, what that means out there for all of the reality shifters and the people that are going into the mall world thinking this is super fun, I'm going to go to the arcade and I'm going to do this and that. We talked about this earlier, if there are physical manifestations and implications and attachments that are joined to us in these dimensional spaces that attach to us in the physical waking. If traumatic things are happening to us in these dimensions that we have no memory of, it's going to manifest in the physical waking life. And how do we cope with trauma that we don't remember? And so, just throwing it out there that this stuff might seem like fun and games, and it might seem like, oh, I've got a gift and I get to explore. But if this isn't a simulation and it actually is a screen memory, we might actually be bringing great psychological trauma into our waking hours. So just a word of forewarning for anyone who has maybe not considered that. And I'm not setting that in stone or writing a doctorate thesis on it. It's just something that I've been musing over the last couple of weeks.
Well, and you know, it's something that even whenever I talk about astral projection, things like that on this show, even dream work, that kind of stuff, be careful. Take care of yourself beforehand, take care of yourself after. And especially we talk a lot about targeted individuals on this show.
Yes.
And targeting technology. It is a huge cause of this show. And one of the things that we say regularly with Dr. John Hall is know yourself. Yeah. Know your voice. Know your inner voice. Know what you stand for. Know what you believe. Know when there is something influencing you that is not you. And you'll learn to be familiar with that, things like that.
Yes.
Like, but be wary if you're going to try to go astral jaunting, if you're going to try and do things like that. Even the concept of CE5.
Yes.
You know, it's one of those, like, you are, I'm not a big fan of walking around at a paranormal investigation, asking questions of the air and inviting interaction. That's, I don't think that's science. That's seance.
Yes. Total. total agreement.
And that's a dangerous concept. And even the idea of preparing to bring this back to the idea of what we manifest, that's something that I speak about regularly when I talk at conferences, is if you're actively trying to do something scientifically, whether it's go out and look for Sasquatch, go out and look for UFOs, what have you, you should not be, as you're packing your gear and packing your clothes, listening to stories about said location, filling your head full of stories and ideas and profundities and who knows what about the location that you're about to go, quote, investigate. You're only polishing the filter of your data at that point. That's all you're doing, is polishing the filter that you're going to look at your raw data through. And in addition to that, you may be subtly manifesting something there with your intent.
Oh, yes.
Much like a CE5 experience. I have no doubt that people can manifest something in the sky when all focusing together with intent. Now, what that is, that's a different story.
Yep.
You know, and trusting the fact, as Stephen Greer does, that there are none of them that have ill intent. It's like, well, I certainly hope not. good Lord, let's hope not, Doctor.
Exactly. I could not agree with you more, Chris. If you build it, they will come, right?
Yeah.
And the thing with this CE5, Close Encounter of the Fifth Kind, in other words, I'm not waiting to get abducted.
Yeah.
I'm going to
stand
outside.
Contact.
I'm going to stand outside with a suitcase saying, you know, astral or bust. I don't know. But the fact is, this goes back into all of my research, too, with how a lot of these sleep paralysis entities are vampiric in nature. They're standing at the threshold of your bedroom door because, like vampires, they cannot come in without the invitation.
Consent.
And these things are looking for consent. And if they can trick you into the consent by looking like grandma or something, they don't care. They don't play fair at all.
That's
so
it's a different set of rules.
Yeah. Like I had a friend once who said, I want to go to Area 51. I want to get abducted by an alien. I'm like, well, first of all, you're crazy, because I know people that really have and they're not too thrilled about it. But the fact is, if you do something like that, you don't even have to drive all the way to Area 51. If you keep saying things like that out loud into the ether, there's eyes and ears everywhere. And if these things know that you're a willing subject.
Yes.
Unless you're completely worthless to them, because I think these things, I don't think these things show up just to say boo and give people campfire stories. They are looking for very specific types of people that can serve their purpose. And so if you aren't of any value to them, they're probably not going to bother you, even if you want to be bothered. But if you have any sort of potential in their eyes and you go around manifesting that and making it very known that you're willing, they're not going to hesitate. That's all the permission that they need. But total agreement, this CE5, we are getting into some really dangerous territory.
Well, and, you know, one of the things I say regularly on the show, whenever we talk about Bigfoot, things like that, and I will say it verbatim because it is an exact phraseology that I use, that I believe that there is a large hominid creature roaming the woods of North America and beyond. But I also think that there is something else that will gladly use the tropes of our mind.
Oh, yeah.
To get the consent that it needs. And if it's a Bigfoot that you'd be okay with seeing, if it's a dog man, if it's a unicorn, what have you, that is what will manifest for you in your unique experience that then, once again, provides them the backdoor consent because you're okay with that.
Yes, I love that.
Were you to see the natural form, you'd turn your head no different than looking at the burning bush.
Yes, Absolutely. As Ellie Marzulli always says, rebuke first, ask questions later. get out of there. But I love the way that you worded that too, though, Chris, because I read a story online years ago. All these things that we didn't know the treasure trove we had 10 years ago, if only we had downloaded and saved more things that we read. But it was a guy who had been, you know, a chosen one. And this very beautiful angelic type of creature would show up, you know, frequently throughout his life and share arcane knowledge. And they were friends, you know, and it approached him in a very friendly manner. And at one point, the man was kind of tired of all of this, because he knew that this wasn't the thing's real form. And he's like, I want to see your real form. And the thing said, I'll never be able to meet with you ever again. If you see my true form, it'll scare you. And he's like, no. So this goes back and forth. And eventually they were outside, and this beautiful, you know, spirit of light showed the man its true form, and he was mortified to the point where he doesn't even give a description of the thing in his own testimony. And the thing never came back because he was terrified. And I think I've kind of thrown down the gauntlet a couple times online, not very often, that for people who have these beautiful angels of light or these spirit guides or grandma or somebody that comes to them, that like the dead son, I challenge you to ask, I want to see your real form.
Yeah.
Because you're going to see real quickly that angel of light or your grandma or, you know, whatever is probably wearing some kind of a presentable meat suit. And God only knows what you are covenanting with. And I use that word very carefully. We aren't just chatting with these
things. Very good usage of that term. Very good usage.
You are exchanging
consent.
You are exchanging consent, and covenants are not easily broken. You can, but you don't break a covenant. Like if you break a lease or you break your car payments, there's consequences because you've broken it. So you have to know ways to annul these covenants legally. And because these things are very legalistic and they know the loopholes, they know the law, this would be like going into court with like the number one, you know, attorney out there and thinking that you could read a couple things online and
you could self-represent.
Yeah, exactly. So these things know how to get us legally wrangled, and you can annul these covenants. But the problem, Chris, isn't how do I annul the covenant? The problem is getting the average person to understand that that's what they've done.
Well, but right over my shoulder, right there next to the radiation detector, is my actual copy of the Vatican I Rite of Exorcism.
Mm.
And in the back of it is a whole bunch of caveats for after the exorcism. Like, hey, make sure to follow up with the family. Make sure to keep in touch with them. Make sure to advise them of the fact that whatever they did to get in this, even if they ain't close to God, they need to get close to God.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to get close to him quick.
Yeah.
They need to not renew this covenant.
Yes.
With this being. Whatever access they gave them, they need to revoke that access and keep it revoked.
Yes.
Because as soon as you crack that door again. And it's no different than with addiction or anything like that. Like one of my favorite quotes in the world is Jerry Garcia, as an addict. It's the idea that, you know, I'm an addict. I'll always be an addict. The only difference is whether or not I choose to use today.
Mm.
And once you accept that fact, once you own that, it gives you your consent back.
Yes.
You know,
and
you have to take that back. You have to own your consent again. And yes, once again, realize that, like, because you have been tarnished, tarnish will happen again more rapidly for you. That's just a fact. So, you do have to be vigilant. You have to be spiritually. It doesn't mean you have to go to church every day or anything like that. You have to be vigilant about your thought form. Because once again, frequency is not just what you see and hear. It's what you think.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And Chris, we have so much power in the dream world. So absolutely. for those of you who are getting sucked into the astral against your will, you don't want to be there. You're not seeking that out. Now, I realize not everyone is conscious when they dream. Not everybody is lucid when they dream. And even those of us lucid aren't necessarily lucid every time. But, and I'm not saying that there's never any retaliation or consequence for it, but anytime something's presented to us in this dream world, we have the right to say, no, I don't want to do that. Like if they're offering us food or drink, or they're coaxing us over a threshold or telling us to do something, we can say, no, I don't want to do that. And depending on how high up on the food chain this entity is that you're dealing with, if it's low on the food chain, they will immediately drop it because yeah. they know that they don't have the authority over you. You do have a free will and you do have to consent. Now, if you're dealing with a higher entity, there can be some anger, some retaliation there if you say, I do not consent. But I've had this happen many times. And I'll tell you, Chris, it just happened to me yesterday, and I've never had a dream wow. this overt before. But I'm also doing a lot of experimenting with very specific prayers before I go to bed because I'm testing my theory that dreams might be screen memories.
Oh.
And yesterday I had a dream. It was just started out very normal where I was apparently working in like a daycare center. So this was a nightmare. And the guy who worked there, the head guy, looked like an old boss of mine. He's just this really friendly guy. And so at one point, all of the employees had to like gather in the back room. And so we were back there for like an employee meeting or something. And all of a sudden, he rolls back the carpet and on the floorboards is a pentagram in red in the circle. And I'm like, what? Like, it's never been this overt.
Wow. Yeah. That's kind of, hey, yeah. How you doing?
Exactly. So I said, well, hey, what's the difference between this and an occult ritual? And he was super smooth and he had an answer right there, you know, that made sense. Huh. And I said, heck no, I'm not doing that. And I walked away. I didn't step around the circle. I was still in the room, and the other people were around the circle. And this is again why we have to be so careful. Everybody says, I remember my dreams. So do I, but I don't have a memory of what happened after I stepped out of that circle. And so what yeah. part there is missing? Because the dream went on. And there was another part where I went up to him afterwards to tell him something. And he was the boss. He was the nice, friendly guy. And when I looked him in the eye, his eyes turned from brown to a piercing gray blue. And he no longer was short and chubby. He looked more like the classic kind of Anton LaVey slash vampiric. He had the dark black
oh,
hair
wow.
and he was taller and slimmer. And so I kind of gave him a second glance and then he turned back into the other guy and kind of like smirking at me, you know? So when I woke up, I thought, okay, there's a whole bunch of that dream. I don't think I remember because it doesn't cohesively make sense with the pieces, the fragments that I have. And so I just covered my bases like, hey, if I made any covenants or oaths or agreements or promises or anything in that dream, you know, annul them, you know, in the name of Jesus. And I always kind of go back to Numbers chapter 30, which is a really obscure chapter in the scripture, but it's part of the Torah. It was part of the Jewish law, right?
Yep.
And it was talking about how if a man makes a vow to God, he has no recourse. He made the vow and it stands. But then it said, if you're a woman who's married or you're a virgin daughter, unmarried, living with your father, brother, uncle, whatever, on the day that the husband or father hears of an oath that you made to God and disapproves of it, on their behalf, the father or the husband can disavow her of her pledge. And so what's kind of cool about this, if you take this into more of a spiritual rather than a literal sense, if we look upon God as God the Father and we look upon Jesus as Jesus, the bridegroom of the church, it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman or single or married or divorced or whatever. We have a father and we have a bridegroom, which means yep. we have two advocates who, and we're talking earlier, Chris, about how do we annul these covenants that we've made legally. We do them through Numbers 30. We have two advocates in the heavenly sphere who are greater than those who we have covenanted with. And if we implore Father or Jesus on my behalf on the day that you heard of it, which is today, this is the dream I had last night, will you disavow me? And so I'll pray those kind of prayers when I wake up and I'm unclear of whether or not I did something or not. Because in the missing fragments of that dream, what if I got pulled back into the circle? What if I ate something? What if I got tied up in the middle of that circle? How would I remember?
This conversation's going to go a little bit long.
Okay.
Like literally my timer on my screen just said time's up.
Okay.
However, there are a couple things that you brought up. Number one, the consummation, the eating and drinking. That is something that we talk about regularly on this show when it comes to even Sasquatch lore. Those were rules like with the native societies that had agreements with them. Like you do not accept food from them.
Wow.
You do not follow them into the woods. Same thing with fairies, people of the fae, things like that. You accept food from them. You are now beholden to them.
Yes.
You accept food from them. You are now in their world and may not come back. You know, don't follow them into the woods because you may not come back to this world. You're in their world now.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting concept when you start considering that, Vicki. And in addition to that, that idea of advocacy, there is something that I have been, and once again, I am not a religious person. I don't really go to church anymore, despite being a former Catholic seminarian, all kinds of things. But there is one thing that I have really come to, especially when it comes to consent and when it comes to our power and what we are capable of manifesting in the world through that God-given breath. And that's the idea of taking the Lord's name in vain. And I don't consider it like in the profanity way that most people do. I consider it in the manifestation way, Vicki, and in the fact of that advocacy moment that you're talking about, using them to help you annul a spiritual contract that you may have made unbeknownst to yourself. That is when you invoke the name of your Lord. Those are things that are beyond your control.
Yeah.
For you to take the Lord's name in vain is for you to literally, you call upon him. It's calling up, it's crying wolf. You're asking for help that you technically don't need in the world. Like, God is not going to help you pass geometry, bro. Study your friggin' geometry.
Love it.
It's something that's within your control. So he's not going to help you with it. Because that's your choice. You have a choice there in order to make that happen, and you can make that happen. But but this contract that you're trying to break, that's something that's beyond your control. That's when you invoke the name of your Lord. Aside from that, calling upon him for help with something that you are perfectly able to handle yourself, that's when you're taking his name in vain.
Wow. Amazing. I love it. I'm just sort of on cloud nine here, Chris, because I've had similar conversations, and it's so much like if you just filter everything I'm saying through, you know, vampire movies you've seen, it just seems very fictional, and people do not understand that this stuff is very real.
Yes.
In the spirit realm. And so
even in the physical realm, Vicki, the energy that you give people.
Mm-hmm.
That you allow them to have. Like, once again, if you want to lose the fight, feel free to keep fighting. The real way to win the fight is to not really care if you're right.
Because
it doesn't matter. You're not going to convince somebody of a paradigm.
No.
That's not how this thing works. So
that's right.
Like, you wasting your effort and giving them your energy is them winning. Literally. Keep giving
so
it to
true.
Them. Keep peeling it off to them if you want.
So true.
But if you want to actively be right, just let you give a damn break.
Exactly.
Believe what you believe for the reasons you believe it. and hold that to be true.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so true. And the fact of the matter is, you know, for every one person who doesn't get it, doesn't believe it, I'm the one that gets to sit on this side of my laptop getting all the emails from the people who do get it and whose lives are changed. So yeah. That's worth it to me. And I will take 10 times the misunderstanding and criticism, because I do know that there are so many people affected by this. And they're tired of it, and they're tired of going to the church and not getting an answer, and they're tired of going to the doctor and not getting an answer. And if we can offer them something that is effective for their victory and their joy, yeah. The people that are looking for it are going to recognize it. And exactly. If you don't recognize it, then you don't need it. And yeah. Then don't begrudge the people that do.
Amen to that. Because, you know, that's what once again, I no longer step into a church on a Wednesday night to teach youth, or on a Sunday night to teach youth and adults, things like that. But I do not begrudge anybody that feels the call to Mass or feels the call to go and worship in a similar space with people of like mind and belief. To go to temple, to go pray the Quran with others. Like that's a beautiful thing. And if that is what you were called to, Godspeed and more of it for you, I hope. You know, because not everybody is cut from the same spiritual cloth. Not everybody is able to take that journey on a different level without the rigid guidance of either a singular book or a singular faith. You know, so and good on you for honestly growing, for finding your way to these teachings, Vicky, because it is one of those. It's hard when you're brought up with a very rigid thought form to see things through a prism of light, and to understand that there is a whole spectrum of thought form out there that relates to this that may be pertinent. So let everybody know where they can go to find your work, where they can go to keep up with everything. You appear on numerous shows. You do a show yourself, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Not 100%. Well, I do a show on Rumble.
Okay, there you go.
With my co-host and friend April Lockhart. It's called Demons and Parasites, and it's too hot for YouTube, and it's all about parasites, fasting, autoimmune disease, and how a lot of these quote unquote incurable diseases can be cured. There it is right there. And so if you go to my website, Chris, VickyJoyAnderson.com, and that's Vicky with an I, everything that you need is going to be on that website. And so all the links to all of my socials, all the books that you can order. If you go to the media tab, you're going to get all the podcasts I've appeared on. I have my events on that tab as well, I think, or there's an event tab or something like that. So everything that you would need can be found there. My latest book, They Only Come Out at Night, Exposing the Dark Weapon of Sleep Paralysis. Like I said, you can get there from my website, but you can also find it on lamarzulli.net.
Fantastic. Yeah, and I love the work of LA. I need to reach out to him. I haven't had him on the show in years. So, he's always fun. It's always a great conversation. And you guys over there, especially even Karen Wilkinson, who lives right here in my backyard.
Does she? I love Karen.
Yeah, no, she's been right here in studio. She came and spoke at Symposium of the Strange probably about 4 or 5 months ago.
I remember that.
An event that I put on in San Antonio. So
that's right.
Yeah. And we'll be doing one this oddly enough, at June 25th, Wednesday, June 25th, we'll be doing one with Nikki Folsom talking about people of the Fae and some of these warning stories, across time and across humanity. It's pretty fascinating. So
awesome.
Thank you so much for your time tonight, Vicky. It was an absolute joy having you back on the show.
It was great
to have
Chris.
You on so much more regularly, and I will definitely get you in touch with Nathaniel Gillis.
Looking forward to that.
You guys' aspect on this work is very, very similar. So you take care of yourself. I'll be sending links, all that kind of good stuff. So
thanks, Chris.
All right. Take care. While you are online, everybody, checking out all of the amazing work of Vicky Joy Anderson over at VickyJoyAnderson.com, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can like, follow, subscribe. That is where you can find all of the episodes. That's where you can also tune in live, just so you know. If you are not a fan of watching the show on Facebook, if you don't want to watch on Rumble, if you don't want to watch on YouTube, you can always go directly to our website, CuriousRealm.com/live. We'll take you there. Our live tab right at the top has all of the episodes embedded, as well as our old show and, well, the live streams every week. So when we come back from this commercial break, everybody, we will be joined by our good friend Billy Joe Kane, as well as Jacqueline Kane, the heads of Radical Imp, the Education Foundation. We will be talking about the roots of abuse, narcissism, how narcissists take advantage of children, all kinds of people, in order to exact their goals of control. So we will be right back right after this.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the field observation and encounter log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back from that quick commercial break. Thank you so much to Vicky Joy Anderson for the conversation. It's always great talking with her about dark entities, dark forces that are stalking us around every corner. We'll be getting into that in just a moment with our guests that are in studio. If you are a user of CBD products like I am, stop on by True Hemp Science. TrueHempScience.com is your source for amazing CBD products. They are based right here in Austin, Texas. Christopher Lynch uses a spigeric process using every part of the plant, stems, seeds, buds, leaves. Every part of the plant is used, combusted, and reused in that process repeated until nothing remains, providing an amazing full-spectrum CBD product with terpene profiles and everything included. Stop on by and check them out. TrueHempScience.com is the website that you want to go to. Curious7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more. In this segment, we are very happy to welcome back to the studio our good friend Billy Joe Kane, as well as Jacqueline Kane. The other side, this is the first time you've been on the show. I've met you at numerous conferences, seen you working the booth, things like that. But welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It is great having you here. And our conversation tonight, I think, is one that really hits home in a lot of different ways. My child just turned 8, and a lot of conversations are really hard for parents to broach. As somebody who taught sex and sexuality to junior high kids, things like that, it's something that a lot of things can be very uncomfortable to talk about, and especially just like we were talking about pre-show, Billy, the idea of even how do you even begin to broach the topic of human trafficking?
without it being a huge, nebulous idea. I mean, even the idea of just a legal definition takes a good 10 minutes to fully understand. But you guys at Radical Empathy Education Foundation have really gone through a lot of efforts to not only break down human trafficking, but also just the world of trauma and trauma-induced trauma to begin with. The idea of where do these things come from? How do we break them down? Really welcome the conversation into our home, because you have to be willing to have that conversation with a kid. Certainly. It's not an easy one to broach. And our conversation tonight is really about the world of control. And I would love to play a clip for you folks. However, you know how the internet works. We cannot play songs from Disney. However, we will be going over the lyrics to the song from Hunchback of Notre Dame and how it actively fully reveals the world of abuse, how it shows the way that Quasimodo has been brought to this point of understanding of himself that is a false point of understanding, that is a way that someone has warped him into thinking that the world views him in a different way in order to control him. So and granted, folks, this is not an episode about how Disney is trying to control your kids. Okay.
Thank you for making that clear.
Let's preface that right now, because there are good lessons in there. Like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, what Disney does do is they will take stories from history, they will take characters from history, and extrapolate upon them. The Hunchback of Notre Dame being one. Where this story has been around for a few hundred years before Disney has taken it. But what Disney had a chance to do was take this story and really relate it to the way that children see the world and to the way that sometimes we help children see the world, either in a good light or in a bad light. So how did you first, I guess let's start with you, Jacqueline, because you're really the powerhouse behind this article that we have up on screen. What first brought you to start to break down the lyrics of Disney songs to help understand things from a traumatic point of view of a character in that kind of way?
I have been studying narcissism and how most all predators and human traffickers are nothing but professional predators. Yeah. Many, many, many of them have narcissistic traits if they're not fully diagnosable as a narcissistic personality disorder. And when I listen to this song, I can hear how narcissistic that Frodo is towards Quasimodo is childlike, and his thinking is childlike, and that is why it's so revealing what the guy says to him and influences him in a way that you would influence a child were you to say these kind of things.
Sure, yeah, and you know that's a great point to bring up, the idea of childlike, because you know whether you're talking about somebody who has been abused and put in these situations and taken advantage of through them, or the person who sadly is subjecting people to these things, both of them are looking for a hole to be filled. Sadly and horribly. That's something that I try to instill in my child always. There are bad people in the world, you know, but don't forget, sometimes they've been taken through things that brought them to that point. We're all a subject of nature and nurture, not versus nurture. Like it's nature and nurture.
Certainly. And I thought one of the things that was interesting is that Quasimodo was basically born into that.
Yes.
He was born into it and he has been raised that way. And there are different experiences in life with narcissists. There are people that are raised by narcissists, which causes a certain path. There are people that end up with a narcissistic boss or a narcissistic boyfriend, and they they are nearly defenseless because they've never met someone that is like a narcissist. It is worth studying what type of person this is. They have an encyclopedic knowledge of your emotions, and their only goal is their own satisfaction,
yes,
whatever, however they define that.
Yeah. Yeah. And to the point that, well, and you even bring it up in the article, the fact of many people, because there is, of course, there's natural narcissism, which mm-hmm. is something that is not really brought upon you. It's not really taught. Mm-hmm. It's an actual disorder,
mm-hmm.
Where you sadly can't help.
Narcissism is a huge spectrum.
Absolutely.
That goes from, I know my wife would probably really want this last cookie, but I want it a little bit more.
Yep.
So you eat the last cookie knowing that your wife would have enjoyed it also. That's a little bit selfish. And narcissism is the definition of selfish.
Yeah.
The very, very most extreme, they think of nothing but themselves.
Exactly. And we have some of those tendencies up on screen right now. The constant criticism and belittling, isolation from friends and family, constant vigilance and adapting, and of course, leading into things like lack of boundaries. And then gaslighting and manipulation is where things really come to the culmination.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of
go ahead.
So anybody that's listening right now, if you haven't had a chance, jump on the article, the video to the thing is linked to it. Pause us right now, go listen to the song and come back. One of the things that Jackie and I, we focus on abuse prevention.
Yeah.
And when we started Radical Empathy, we really focused on talking about and worrying about human trafficking. But as we, you know, spent 9 years in this, what we've learned is that as soon as people hear that term, it's too much for them. They kind of turn off.
Yeah.
So we're really trying to find ways to kind of sneak in some learning here to get them to understand the basics, right? So this is more about a controlling parent, job, or even a work contract can be controlling like that.
Or even your kid.
Yeah. And so what we're trying to do is get people to recognize when it's happening to them, when they feel like they're being abused, or they feel like they're being criticized, or feel like belittling is happening, so that they will understand, aha, I should probably ask somebody about what's going on.
Please believe yourself.
Yeah,
whether you are 8 years old or whether you are 80 years old, listen to your gut. I don't need to define guilt or shame or embarrassment. Does it feel icky? Does it feel bad? Do you feel negative? Then you should ask questions.
Yeah.
And that is our biggest thing. Ask questions. If you don't get help, ask someone else. If you don't get help, ask a third person. Ask until you get help.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we really should have prefaced the preface for the fact of, like, you actively worked at the Austin State Hospital for years. Things like
that's
that.
Right.
You know, like, oh, as he's wearing the shirt, it just dawned on me.
Gotta show him the back.
Yeah,
gotta show him the back. Look what's on the back. Like, that's the day we met. That's the day that we met.
We actually met working at the state hospital, taking care of patients that needed to be protected, and they needed to have a calm environment, and they needed to have stability under their feet. So they needed to know, you know, it's like, so we learned a lot about what people needed from working at the state hospital.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And once again, these are things that when it comes to those hierarchy of needs, you know, the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, things like that. Like, we all, once again, try to fill the hole that's inside of us in the same way. And when somebody understands that hole in a different way, doesn't matter if it's a religious leader or a cult leader, and note, I separated those two.
Yeah.
Gracious of you.
Well, because cults don't necessarily have to be religious.
That's right.
They don't have to be religious.
They have
that's
to be political.
Right.
They
that's
can be
correct.
All kinds of things.
Yeah, that's right.
And literally all that is a group of people who have decided that this is their end goal, or this is what they are trying to achieve in life, and there is somebody leading the group who is willing to take advantage of the rest.
Right.
That's all it takes, and it doesn't take much to get to that point. And this is something that we talk about a lot on this show when it comes to paranormal communities, when it comes to paranormal experience, things like that. You know, our want of confirmation can lead us down very, very dark and dangerous places.
Well, you know, a lot of these, excuse me, do you want to?
I was going to say that sometimes we'll have sex traffickers, I mean, sex survivors of sex trafficking on a go through the headset, and they're like, I did not know it happened like that.
Yeah.
It's so clear now. I can see exactly how that happened to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And once again, these five steps that you've laid out really, really do lay bare the methodology by which so many, not only the abuser uses and utilizes, but what we're trying to have fulfilled.
Right.
As well.
Well, yeah. So one of the ways that these predators, they find you, that what they do is they do kind of an interview process. Mm-hmm. Like they'll ask you how you're doing, you know, what's your relationship like with your parents? You know, do you have any money for food? Where are you staying in town? They ask all those questions. And what they're doing is they're basically trying to find out what problems that you have that they can solve. And then take advantage of you based on those problems. So there's a whole interview process before we get even to the, you know, the belittling and picking on you and all that stuff. So people won't necessarily be picking up on that. We'd love for them to, but if you've already been chosen by a predator, this is what it feels like once that predator starts putting their claws into you.
Absolutely. And once again, those claws may not sink in hard in any kind of way. It may not seem dangerous whatsoever.
And it may not be a radical slope. It can grow slowly and just continue to get worse and worse.
And it can have the same ebbs and flows as a natural romantic relationship.
Certainly.
Anything like that. And it doesn't take much, sadly and horribly, to separate somebody from their support network. It doesn't take much to separate somebody from those kind of things. So let's go ahead and start getting into the lyrics of the song, things like that, and how this relates. And I know a lot of you out there may be like, oh, why are we talking about this? It's because it does relate to so many sides of these communities.
This show, or this song, is so well written. Jackie and I, we've analyzed this thing from so many different areas. And it seems like it has at least three different sections. So the first section is where Quasimodo is being programmed by his controller, by Frollo. So and then after that section happens, then Frollo is singing and Quasimodo is singing. Mm-hmm. So he's like mimicking what he's saying, and he's like, it's almost like he's being programmed.
Yeah.
And then at the end, Frollo drops out, and then you have Quasimodo, and he's saying all the things that he's been programmed with, and how he'd like to break away from all of that stuff, but it's just incredible. So Jackie,
please, go ahead.
Give us your thoughts on how this thing opens up.
I think it's beautifully laid out in the article, and I think that it's pretty self-explanatory. I hope that the people will read the article and listen to the song.
Absolutely.
And it's on screen, and I think it's laid out so well that we can just follow along with, you know, obviously the bold is the, you know, the lyrics.
Yeah.
So what the narcissist here is trying to do is actually get you to feel, or get Quasimodo to feel like Quasimodo owes everything to him.
That's right.
So it's like, I am the person that's keeping everything in control. You have to do what I say. You want to do all the things.
And also that he's doing him a favor, that he, you know, that he's doing him some great favor with the small amount that he does give him.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And the idea of like, hey, look, who's taking care of you?
Right. And you and that you owe me for what I do for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially even just going through the first three lines of the song, the world is cruel, the world is wicked. It's I alone, you can trust in the whole city, I am your only friend. Now, if you just met somebody,
mm-hmm.
and these were the words out of their mouth.
Or if you date someone who regularly says those sort of things.
Check this out. Like, so one place the traffickers find a lot of their victims is at a bus terminal.
Absolutely.
And if you think about these three lines, this, you got off a bus terminal, you are a stranger to this city. This person has come in, they found out you don't have a place to live, you don't have any food. you need a place to sleep for tonight at the very least. And they're saying, you know, hey, I'm going to help take care of you inside this city. The cops are going to do this. These people are going to do that. Why don't you come back to my apartment and I'll take care of you.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that is that's what's laying out here. And then they work on that programming of the, I'm your only friend. You can only trust me. I'm the person that you can trust. I will help navigate it.
They pick them up outside of prisons and juvenile detention centers also.
Sure.
And you were actually mentioning something just a few seconds ago about, what I'm thinking about, okay, so people that are outside of their, not just their comfort zone, but when they don't have their support network, right?
Yeah.
So if you got off a bus, you don't have your support network.
Yeah.
If you get displaced, like in war, or if your community, burns up in a fire or whatever, all of the support system that was there is now completely gone, and you are at the mercy of whoever is going to be at the end of that bus terminal. So it's like, you know, you want to really think. I mean, I know that the bus terminal is not the right example for everybody, but it could be a relationship.
It could be the Astrodome after Katrina, man.
Yeah.
Like horrible, horrible things happened at the New Orleans Superdome and at the Astrodome.
That is a common trafficking thing, that when a big event happens, girls are brought in, boys are brought in from all over.
Oh, yeah.
And on another show, we'll tell you what happened at South by Southwest when that happened to us.
Well, and it happens regularly. You know, there is a company that I have done work with who no longer has open bars because things like this started happening. Stuff like that. So it's not just kids. It's grown-ups. If anybody is susceptible to this, one of my favorite things that you guys have done over the last 5 years is really start directing this toward elderly care. And the idea of, ooh, like, how I just got goosebumps thinking about it. Because we used to have a former Secret Service agent on who was the head of the UT fraud department. Talking, like, we'd have him on every year in Dudes and Beer Days, like, just before the holidays. Like, hey, if you're worried about your parents shopping online, listen to our Sean McCleskey. Yeah. Like, he's going to tell you the things to look out for in emails for your parents, stuff like that. And it's fascinating how we very easily weed these emails out.
That's not accurate, actually. You know? We, as in us,
like here in this room?
As in right here.
But we constantly have things that we're
absolutely.
Like, we're like, are you sure this is a real email? This looks totally real and legit. It's crazy how legit these things are.
I get no less than 5 to 6 emails a day about my Facebook page.
Yeah.
And content notification. This music piece was used. And what's really funny is it comes through to my avatar account. It doesn't come through to my actual account anymore, which is Facebook verified. Oh. It comes through my avatar account, which is my back door, just in case I get hacked again. Yeah. So I immediately know this is not real.
Right.
Like, this is absolutely fake.
Yeah. I have that bogus email account too. That's, I sign up for things on it. Anything that goes in there.
But without that, unless it starts with my dearest or dear so-and-so, like that, Meta will never start something out with dear ever. They won't.
But I will tell you that, last year we were asked by someone to hire a company that they had investigated. They had 7 locations around the globe.
So we had somebody wanted us to vet a developer.
Wrote back and forth with us for about 4 days.
Yep.
And then it went radio silent, and it took 5 of us another 4 days to abjectly prove that company did not exist. It fooled all 6 of us for almost a week.
Yeah.
And we were working hours and hours.
Yeah.
And I finally found in one document the name of a building, and I called the real estate agent who would be collecting the rent. And I asked her, does this company exist?
Is this who is?
And she was enraged that they that was in one document out of a million pages in a thing that had 7 different offices in the world. I mean, like, the amount of time and effort that someone went to make that fake company that took, 6 or 7 people a week.
That had real points of verification, that had actual.
And I would guess
spent a ton ton of money and time building up LinkedIn profiles, Facebook profiles, PDFs, look like products that were real. I mean, it was unbelievable.
And that's just it. When you start looking at things like that in the aspect of these things, the world is cruel. The world is wicked. Yeah. I'm the only one you can trust. I'm your only friend. Like the only thing that comes after that is what's your social security number so I can undo the hack that just happened to your system.
Yeah, you know. And you think about the elderly thing, right? Mm. So we have a friend who just got put into a care home. She broke her hip, and so she's in there now. And so we actually are traveling up to see these people constantly. And man, elderly are abused constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly.
We have another friend because as soon as there's an obituary, it goes out to all the predators on the internet.
Yep.
And they start getting calls around the clock. And they also know your dating profile when it shows up. And in the year after her husband died, she wrote more than $40,000 worth of checks to people that were in love with her. And, you know, but my carburetor. Yeah.
I just need a few hundred dollars for some groceries.
It was during COVID that my wife, Amy, literally ended up outing this guy on Facebook Messenger who had contacted her. It was friends of friends and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, come to it after about half a day of talking, was looking for some money. Right. And it was when that hit that she was like, okay. All right. And she actively
We are all professionals in the field, and it's very difficult for us to not get tricked.
She pulled it out of him that he lived in Nigeria and was totally like, I know it's horrible. This is the only way I can support my family.
There is an entire culture in other countries about scamming, and they scam Americans.
Long as you're not scamming your own.
Right. They scam Americans because we have a hell of a lot more money than they do. And one halfway decent $20 scam can be a month's worth of food for their families.
And, you know, like there was somebody I know, and this is a real thing. He takes care of this person, all kinds of stuff. He had a digital assistant. And he's in the podcast community, stuff like that. And somebody was like, oh, how much do you pay your digital assistant? He's like, well, my digital assistant lives in India. I pay him about $250, $300 a month. And this is what they do.
Right.
And it was show notes. It was posting videos.
Right.
And everybody went off like, oh, my God, I can't believe you're taking advantage. He's like, whoa, wait a minute.
$250 is a lot of money.
I am not the only client that she has.
Right.
She has about 10 other clients that she does this same service for. And my $300 a month almost pays her expenses for the entire month.
All right. Yeah.
Like food, housing, electricity, everything is almost paid with just my $300, much less the other four or five that she has.
Right.
So she is in a different caste in her society. Understanding those things and the fact of, well, and we even got into it last time, the idea of don't go just answer an internship. Don't just go give away your time and effort for experience. That's not how this game works. If somebody is only giving you experience,
how human trafficking works.
It's how labor labor trafficking works. And unfortunately, unless you're going through an authenticated college system to go do an internship and you're getting college credits in exchange
it's an apprenticeship, not
an internship.
Right.
Exactly.
And there's a reason for all of that stuff too. It's because people will just take advantage of it. And the myth of the college intern is just so deep in our culture. People in my industry seem to think that they can, oh, just go get an intern for that. I'm like are you listening to yourself? What are you talking about? that's not legal. And they're like, sure, it's legal. I've heard it's legal. And I'm like,
in the video game industry, on the podcast.
I who keep you, teach you, feed you, dress you. Like, those are the next lines in the song.
Yeah.
It's like, so if you're out there doing an internship and all you're getting is a little bit of knowledge, like, hey, guess what? You could probably watch YouTube videos and get that exact same knowledge without actively making money for other people. Right. And that's really the big part of trafficking. Even the conversation we were having pre-show, it's the fact of profit has to be made.
Yes,
by somebody.
For human trafficking.
For human trafficking.
What a narcissist can be someone, yeah. You know, a lot of black sheep have some narcissists in their family.
Absolutely.
And they just draw a line and they walk away, and good on them.
Yeah.
They're a narcissist that is extreme. There's almost no negotiation beyond no contact.
Yeah.
You will be abused on every occasion.
Yeah.
Every time you ask yourself, is he doing that to make me jealous? You just go right ahead and yes. If you think that somebody's doing something to make you feel a certain way, you can bet they are.
Well, and especially if it makes you feel that way.
Right.
You know?
And you have to check your feelings.
You do. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with checking your feelings.
Nope.
There's nothing wrong with taking assessment. And there's nothing wrong with your actual feelings.
Yes. Oh. And if you have negative feelings, that's great if you've investigated why you have those feelings.
Yes.
And the reason why that you're feeling negative is realistic and, you know, not because your boyfriend told you that.
Yeah. Not because somebody else is negative.
That's because someone else, yeah, feels that way about you, not the way that you feel about yourself.
Well, and that is very much the, once again, the second part of the message of this song is the idea of the keeper. There's really no other way to put it, because Quasimodo literally calls him master.
Yes.
Literally calls him master, which is, you know, granted in a very old educational sense, that's what it was. You had a schoolmaster, mm-hmm. all kinds of things. So it was somebody that was showing you the way of life, showing you the way of the world. But when you come down to, once again, the narcissism of it and the idea of using words to control somebody, using somebody's emotions to control somebody, I who look upon you without fear, I can protect you, boy, unless you always stay in here. Things like that. Those are the things that, once again, even your negative self-talk,
yes, is damaging.
Is damaging at that mm-hmm. point. And
I would like to just say one particular thing,
please.
On I who look upon you without fear. A lot of times when children are made to do embarrassing, mm. humiliating, sexual, quote unquote, dirty, whatever
yeah.
things, they are told by the predators that your dad would never love you when you've touched a man like that. Your mother
yeah.
would never take you back.
Yeah, they'll and, be so ashamed.
Yes, that your parents are so ashamed of you that they would never take you back. And that is the first thing when you're talking to children is that, look, no matter what, I will love you. Death cannot separate us.
Yeah.
You know, death can physically separate us, but nothing else. No
yeah.
pictures, no images. You know, the images, you know, are going to not even be real more and more and more and more.
And that's something that, we're finding with child sexual abuse material online, whether it's done as a deep fake or whether it's real. One of the things we're finding is that children are being blackmailed with these photos. They call it sextortion.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is those kids will wind up and drain their bank accounts or send any type of gift card to the person that's basically blackmailing them for this
yeah.
stuff. And if they run out of money, the blackmailers will do things like try to convince them to kill themselves.
Yeah.
Because they take that footage. They want to catch it on camera. They catch that. Then they can sell that and do things with
yep.
it. It's insane.
Which they're going to do anyways, no matter what the child does.
Oh, right.
The child could have the police chief in his room while it's happening, and they're still
right.
going to sell it.
Well, my point is that parents now are they have to tell their kids that I will love you even if there's
right.
a nude photo of you online
yeah.
or a pornographic video of you online. I will still love you.
That's
because
right.
kids will kill themselves if they get
yeah.
enough guilt and shame and
absolutely.
All that stuff.
While
absolutely.
the traffickers are using the parents' social media also to manipulate that child.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting information from grandmas, you know,
yep.
they're getting information from, you know, about the name of their dog.
You know, these,
I mean,
really? How many times
threaten a person's dog
How many times have we had the conversation as to why my child's name is not used on social media?
Yeah, that's right.
I have never once. I did. It happened very early on, not from me, but other people who said his name. And right. I deleted the comment and immediately texted them, hey, I have realized you're trying to be sweet using my son's name in a post on social media. It's enough that I am violating his rights by giving his biometric data to the internet by right. posting a picture without his permission.
There's an amazing...
Let's not tie his name to that biometric
data. We don't need to make it any easier.
There is an amazing video that was made by the German government called The Dark Side of Sharenting on YouTube.
Interesting.
And they took one photo of a baby, and they took... didn't tell the parents, and the parents show up at the movie theater, and up on the movie theater, they watch their child grow up digitally, and then she has a talk with them about her digital privacy, and it is very impactful.
And you know, also something that we talk about on this show regularly, we have zero definition of digital identity in America, folks. Make no mistake. Any law that you... All those screens that you find annoying whenever you log into a website where it's like, all right, hey, can we use your cookies? That's the UK. That's the EU. They actively have a digital concept of digital identity, and your cookies, your thought pattern on the internet, what you look for, what you browse for, are uniquely part of your internet brain and part of your internet personality, which makes it part of you. And they can't get it without permission. We have programs like Prism that just mass scrape that data because all metadata is just metadata. The metadata isn't actively part of you and your digital identity. So feel free to bring that up to your local congressman because it's a huge, huge thing. Like I had no problem when Pornhub put up walls. Well, when Texas walls for Pornhub. No problem. If you have if you got a problem with proving you are 18 or over to look at some pornography, you may want to consider that.
I always have to tell this story. One of our advisors is an adolescent addiction specialist, and one day he said he was telling me that he had his first 10-year-old client who came in who self-diagnosed as addicted to pornography. Addicted, 10-year-old. You know, and we talk a lot about, you know, online safety and all this stuff, specifically having to do with the internet being dangerous. Yeah. And people are giving their children cell phones at completely unsupervised. Yeah. I know how you are with your son.
I'm pretty good about it.
You are pretty good. You're on top of it. You are actively involved, which is the best you can
be. It's all you can be as a parent.
Right. Actively involved. But Jackie and she was telling a story yesterday, actually, that we had been working for like 20 hours or something. We had to go to the grocery store to pick up some stuff at the pharmacy. So we go in and we're waiting for the meds to get dropped. And we look around and there's six unattended children
under five.
Yeah, they had to be under five.
And I mean, like, not one of them had any
access to the internet, watching videos, inappropriate. I mean, it was unbelievable.
And it's like, wow, we've spent all these years and here's six examples while we're waiting 3 minutes for our meds.
Yeah, we've got a lot of work to do, man. Yeah. We've got to teach these parents, man. The parents need to know that the internet is not safe.
Maybe one thing that we...
AT&T and T-Mobile, they're just giving out those devices like candy with no training, no understanding.
And you know, it's funny because, as you know, I did an archiving project. And part of that archiving project was archiving about 15, 16 hours of footage from Heaven's Gate, from the Heaven's Gate cult. Mm-hmm. And this was all ensuing footage in the aftermath. You know, like, hey, here's a CNN panel. Here's Larry King talking to a psychiatrist about what makes people do this. Things like that. And everything. This was 1999. You were still looking at an HTML page at best on the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, you were still getting an AOL disk in the mail. Every single expert that spoke used the exact words of these lonely people on the internet who have no idea who their friend actually is in a chat room. Yeah. You remember the chat room thing? Like, you maybe, you think you're talking to a hot chick. You may be talking to some 69-year-old guy in Poughkeepsie, you know? Still the case. Still fully the case.
I think it's important, if we could, right at this moment, discuss that you can buy your elderly, you can buy your children phones that don't have the features.
Yes.
Where your child is just as safe, can call you can tell the phone what numbers it's able to receive. You can tell the phone. And we did not allow our children to have phones until they were 16.
Sure.
So you want to avoid screen time as much as humanly possible. But if they do have to have a phone, there are options out there where they can still have access to a telephone. You feel safe, they feel safe, and you're not putting them on the internet.
Absolutely.
And because the internet is the problem, not the phone.
It's a major exposure point.
Oh, no, no, no. The access that the phone gives you is the problem. What you get when you get.
It's a threat vector for sure.
Absolutely. And
it's the doorway.
The prime example is that I normally give is predictive programming and predictive ad algorithm. They do not, no service needs to have your microphone enabled.
I encourage
they can get all of that just by what you browse for every day during a certain window of time, and actively with a good 85% to 90% accuracy,
and even more good
serve
news.
Up the ad for what you will purchase and, without the video or microphone.
And even more good news: home appliances have joined the thing.
That's right.
And now, if you set your air fryer to tell you what time the chicken is done, they have full rights to sell all
That's
of the
right.
information. I encourage people every single day, when you see something that says, "Why am I seeing this ad?" you press that, and you try to find. You try to find one aspect of privacy that still exists in your world.
Yeah.
It's on ad after ad after ad. You can pick it every day. It will tell you.
Got a Keurig, and inside of the instructions, it had an entire terms and conditions of give yourself
making your coffee.
Yeah, I'm going to take your data, and here's what I'm going to do with your data.
And you can't get the warranty.
You put it in the instructions.
That's right.
You can't get the warranty without addressing it.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it.
And it took me 30 pages to get to opt out. I looked at the beginning of the book. I did try to use the glossary.
Out of a Keurig.
Out
of a coffee maker.
That is selling you're going to sit there and read through 30 pages and opt out. Or are you going to make a 2-minute phone call or a text that registers your product and gives you the warranty?
My son has screen time. He plays games. We monitor his games pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Billy knows this. We are right on top of such things.
Yes, y'all are.
And there have been things that have popped up. There have been, hey, wait a minute. You aren't talking to your audience because my son talks to his audience while he plays.
That's awesome.
His imaginary audience.
He talks to, like in the grocery store, he talks to his audience. It's great.
It's awesome.
They are far from imaginary, Billy.
Oh, that's
They're
true.
There.
He's getting...
they need to like and subscribe.
Come he's on. Getting clicks in real life.
And subscribe.
But in all sincerity, it's one of those, we have to explain to him, no, that game is free to you for a reason, buddy.
Yeah.
Billy likes to say that if you're not buying a product, you are the product.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. Because
kids need to learn that too,
your
right
opinions
off,
and what you think and feel are far more valuable than the $10.99 for that video game.
Oh yeah.
They are worth immeasurably more. Than the $10.99 to purchase a video game. That's why they'll give it to you.
I haven't updated my knowledge on this, but a few years ago I read a piece on Google. And so you're not paying for Gmail, you're not paying for a Google Drive, you're not paying for any of that stuff. But Google is making money off of you.
Mm-hmm.
This article tagged every Google user at a $500 value for Google.
Okay.
So however many accounts that Google has, they're worth at least $500. I'm sure it's more now, but it's that's the data that they sell, the data that they scrape. And
this is why a few years ago, many years after Google purchased YouTube, but why the monetization rules for YouTube and Google changed. to the fact of if you are not posting regularly, if you even by the point of monetization, like the 6 month window,
right?
By 6 months, you should have this many minutes viewed, this many followers, right, this many subscribers, whether you're monetized or not. If you have not hit those benchmarks at any point, Google can deprecate your account, not just your YouTube account, but the Gmail account associated with it, because you are no longer a viable product.
Right. Exactly.
You are no longer the viable product. You are not giving them enough metric.
Sounds like a Black Mirror episode, but it's not. That's real life.
True.
That's really happening.
And that's just it, though. Is like, we can, to bring this back home to the point, is we can be so easily manipulated in those ways. We allow ourselves to be manipulated that way in the internet all day long.
For convenience. So often.
For convenience sake.
Because who has time to read 30 pages in every manual?
Click yes. And I say that on every single family member and friends that, hey, copy paste this onto your Facebook timeline. They can't use your pictures. No, I'm sorry. You clicked the end user licensing agreement. And I'm pretty sure you clicked it again when they resent it to you not too long ago.
Right.
So you can type and copy paste anything you want. You have consented into that system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
You have consented into that system, so your pictures will be used.
Well, we've consented into that system so much that there's a lot of things that we won't even talk about online. We won't post on our
Good
Facebook.
For you.
We won't post
That's right.
on Google. Well, for a lot of reasons. One of them is that if for some reason we cross a boundary line with Facebook or Google or YouTube or whatever, they will cut off our service.
Oh, absolutely. So you're a 501c3, man.
Yeah.
You've got Google Ads that come into you, all kinds of things.
But talk about Google Ads and that money.
Oh, yeah. So Google gives a Google Ad grant to us for $120,000 a year.
Okay.
And you can spend up to $10,000 a month on it. So the way that you spend it is you have to write Google Ads. And those ads get served up whenever somebody is doing a query, right? So they do a Google search, and that ad matches, and then it goes up there. We can't get human trafficking to even show up as a search term in the Google ad console.
No. We've had that available to us, the $120,000 a year, for years and years, and I think 1 month, they got it almost up to $3.50.
Ooh.
That is what it's been spent thus far, to my knowledge.
Wow. If you're a Google Ads expert and you would like to help us spend all that money, bring it on.
Come on in.
Because we have all of it,
but $3.43.
Here's the thing, though. There's a university that we're working with that's volunteering to help us do this, and they can't get it.
Because they can't help us spend the money. Here's the thing, because this is something that our good friend Dr. Rita Louise has had an issue with. She runs a holistic medicine website right here in Austin. Great,
there you go.
Great, amazing lady, or right here in the Hill Country, rather.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing lady, great stuff, great therapist, does all kind of soul healing, things like that. But the problem is, during COVID, there became a whole thing where, no, we will take alternative medicine websites, because a lot of them were going sans vaccine. You know, go bucking the system, talking about things that people didn't want to talk about. So what did Google do? They were like, well, anybody pushing these paradigms of false medicine, things like that, mm-hmm, we will push their traffic down. Because they are an alternative or holistic website.
I'm pretty sure we're all on the same page here.
Exactly. The horrible thing is you're trying to do the right thing with human trafficking, and you're just getting caught up in the swath of the term human trafficking.
Grok can't even help me do, like, short help. I'm like going, I run a human trafficking prevention website.
No.
I run this, and I need you to take this and translate it to this one little thought process, and it looks like it's working, and it prints it on screen, and you're like, okay, cool, it didn't.
We can help you with human trafficking.
This content may violate our usage policies, and you're like going, but I have been around for 9 years. I'm a 501c3. I'm an expert trainer.
Billy got into that when I was trying to give the woman advice about her daughter about to be trafficked. Billy ran into the account, and there it went off for deleted, 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 yeah. deleted. I mean, just, I did not get in a word. And I'm very careful. I did not mention my company. I did not, I didn't say the HT word.
Yeah.
I did not in any way. Oh. And I'll do other things that help online where I'll say some therapy terms that may be helpful to you sure. to investigate are, I mean, I'm very, I tread yeah. very lightly.
Yeah.
And still, you know.
You have to. You have to. And that's just it. And the horrible thing is, yeah, most of Billy knows, you know, most of it is not curated by a human being. It'll hit a human being at like rung 8.
Oh, wait.
out of 10. You know, much like taking your phone to the eye expert at the Mac store. They'll run through 2 sheets, then they'll give it to another better expert, and they'll run through 2 sheets, and then they'll eventually go, we will give you 20% off of an equivalent model. We can do nothing to
oh,
help
now,
you.
Yeah. Oh,
and it's about okay, the we same are, way.
I was in, this is a completely unrelated and upsetting thing. I was in a meeting with 3 men and myself, and one of the men kept peppering the conversation with, what do the men think? 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 So I would just like to take this opportunity to say we have just reached the second of the 3 parts.
That's right.
And we want to learn some about narcissism.
That's it.
Because we want to learn about the spectrum of selfish. And we, you know, eating the last cookie, we're all good with that. But let's talk about the people that do nothing but use your feelings
yes.
to get what they want.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that whole thought process to begin with of what do the men think? You may not think anything of that, folks, but as somebody who studied abnormal psychology, things like that, what you are setting up is an immediate point of failure for anybody that's not a man.
Yeah.
Like, literally, you used the
oh,
actual
it's okay.
words.
He told me that the only value I could add was to learn from his wisdom in silence.
Oh.
So, yeah. At least he gave me instructions and
okay,
stuff.
Okay, okay,
so.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't confusing, like, the whole time, you know. I mean, when he kept interrupting to say, what do the men think? What do the men think?
Yeah, well, and that's just, you know, the idea of not being open to a conversation. The idea of I am in control. I am solely in control. That's very much the narcissist mentality. And the idea of I'm right. Nobody else is right.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot trust your family.
Mm-hmm.
Look, every time they talk to you, they tell you you're crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Every single time they talk
Absolutely.
To you, they tell you you're crazy for being here.
Yes. And when all the
Does
other
that sound
evidence...
like somebody who loves
yes.
you when you're happy?
Right, right. You know, and like I said, we don't need to define what's making you feel bad quite yet.
No.
We just need to first, that alarm needs to go off.
That's right.
And narcissists are very sneaky people. They start with love bombing. They start with, they're going to, you know, I love you the most. And that's why I want you to be safe. And nobody else has ever just loved you this much. That's why, you know, I had to control you where other people haven't, because I'm the only one who understands how precious you are.
Mm-hmm.
And they just turn everything around. And so this is the part of the story when Billy was saying where they start. Quasimodo repeats
yeah.
what he's being, and then he turns into saying it out loud himself
yeah.
when after Frollo leaves.
Yeah, precisely. And the idea of repeating that, the idea of taking that into yourself, making it whole.
And when you've heard it
for them.
So many times,
yeah.
you know, how... Your psychiatric state just can't take it. It
well,
is just,
it
you know, repetition. We all learn by repetition real well.
Well, and you know, something that we bring up regularly on the show is not only do we learn from repetition, because frequency is not just a sound and a color. It's a thought form.
Right.
It's how often are you thinking that thing.
Right.
So the same way that binaural beats can help you accomplish amazing things with your brain and get over traumas, things like that.
Right.
Somebody telling you constantly that you are bad, that you are worthless, that you are no good, that you have no value outside of this system. All of those things are traumatic. And the horrible thing is, yes, our brains are pattern machines that learn, But more than anything, they are pattern machines that learn from negative reinforcement. It's why the military works so well.
And random is even more effective.
Random positive reinforcement is the one that's like the strongest motivator.
Yeah.
But you're right about the negative being there. And what's happening is, and we tend to forget, you know, when children are young, obviously, they have no defenses.
That's right.
They only know what is being pushed into their head.
Yep.
And if they're leadership figures are telling them bad things, they are going to believe that because that's all they
know. That is their entire emotional safety. And you are their God because you are the only safety they have. And that's what makes them feel that they're safe. And everyone needs to feel safe in order to do anything.
Yeah.
And I also noted on this part of the movie in the song, when he's saying that out loud, Frollo's not paying any attention to him. He's not, they're not looking at each other.
No, he is following behind him, seeking his approval.
Right.
In that scene.
Right.
And, you know, as it goes down, it's like, they'll only revile you as a monster. I am a monster. Out there, they will hate you and scorn and jeer because I'm only a monster, you know? And
this next one, too, at the bottom.
Yeah.
That is, you know, it's easier to stay. Why would you want other people to not value like I do?
Yeah.
You know, why would you want other people to say things that I wouldn't, you know, be mean to you? Other people will always be mean to you because you're a monster.
Yeah. Do as I say. Obey instead.
And it's easier for you. That's the easiest and best thing for you to do.
Yeah.
The path of, and that is what narcissists often set up, you know, obstacles that keep you there, that make it impossible for you to leave.
Yep.
Both emotionally, physically, financially, any way they can.
Yeah. Yeah. Precisely. And it's that want of control over somebody. And once again, the horrible fact is, yes, many people are brought into narcissism. Many people are taught narcissism through that nature and nurture part of things, because that's sadly just what they're exposed to. But there are people out there who are naturally that way. They do not come from parents that are like that. And even as a child, and you even bring it up in the article, like even as a child, they are manipulating the parent.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And like as somebody who worked with kids for years and years, like I have seen that.
And sometimes children are
that plays the parents against each other and does anything to attain their end
and
goal.
And poor parents that are just not on the same page, that talk to each other, that the kid has such an opportunity to manipulate those people. They know how to play those parents against each other.
It leads to the end of families.
Yeah, it does.
Quite literally it has.
Especially if one of the parents is a narcissist who's using that child.
Sure.
To abuse the other parent.
Yeah.
There's so many ways that narcissists are so creative.
Well,
they are just some incredibly talented predators.
It doesn't take much to change the good person into a narcissist either. Sadly and horribly, you know,
I want to hear more about that. I want to hear about that.
You know, it's the fact of once you have a taste for things, once you've found a means to power over other people. Not everybody who rises to the rank of CEO treats their underlings well.
If somebody's shown you a cheat hack to get to success, power, money, and sex, they'll use it. Yeah.
Oh,
that's
absolutely
right. Yeah, and it is a dark path. The dark and light side. If you realize that it's there, you can't be using that to succeed. That's bad.
Yeah,
because it hurts people.
Well, and it's something like, hey, my child is magnanimous, is the easiest way to put it, and it's something that I've slowly been teaching him over the last couple years. You need to measure that, buddy. You need to measure that. You need to keep that in check. Like, he would very easily be able to manipulate some people
given the opportunity.
Your son is very smart.
He's very, very smart.
Yeah, if he found out that he could get away with tricking people and getting ahead faster.
Yeah.
That's what we're supposed to do as parents is to teach kids that, things just take a long time on purpose.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
There shouldn't be a hack to get to the top.
Well, and the truth, we just watched Spider-Man for this exact reason, because he is now old enough to grasp. With great power comes great responsibility. The idea of, like, you are a powerful human being. You can move the world around you, and you can move people to Pied Piper with you to any cliff you want, buddy.
Right.
But you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't.
Yeah, that's correct.
You know, you should use your powers to help people.
That's right.
He's got an, especially those who are emotive in that kind of way and can pick up on people's emotions and are just a receiver. That's a dangerous part.
Well,
somebody has a narcissistic bent.
I don't know that you can say somebody is a born leader necessarily, but you can definitely see that they have leadership characteristics.
Absolutely.
And if they're really smart and they know how to use that stuff, it's like as a parent, your job is to keep that in check.
That's right.
It's like use your superpower for good, man. You are able to persuade people. I've watched you do it.
Yeah.
I have family members that are super smart, and I can see them persuading people. And I'm like, look, guy, you can't do it that way.
Yeah, and I've said for years, like, should he become a Mussolini, I'll probably be the proudest father in the camps. Because he'd put me in one.
Yeah, right off the bat.
No, Dad.
See, I don't have any. I don't hold any. Yeah.
I
would even put my father in the camp.
But I fully accept the fact that, yeah, no, he'd put me in the camp too. I would be a dissident, and he would be right.
Because you do need to be taken out if you're
if you're that much of a dissident. Mm-hmm. But these are things that, once again, bring up so many questions in our society and tie to so many things. I mean, horribly, it starts with human trafficking. Like, if you're willing to have that conversation, you'd be surprised how close it is. And like we said outside, it's not halfway across the globe. It's not just in everywhere. Romania.
It's
in
not
China.
Brown it's, people in other countries.
It's across the street.
Yes.
Literally.
It's at your neighbor's.
It's in my kid's school.
It's literally everywhere. Every single person that has a phone that has cobalt in it, which is all of us, that is called artisanal mining.
That's right.
And artisanal, of course, means by hand.
That's right.
And that's done by small children.
Yeah.
So it is artisanally mined for your cell phone by children.
Yeah. And that's just it. It
had not paid a fair wage on top of it.
It's
literally slaves that are digging up the reason your phone can charge.
Yeah. Yeah. Lithium, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, man, this stuff. Yeah, it gets heavy, dude.
It does. And once again, the question comes to bear. How do you begin the process of conversation in a society? How do you begin the conversation of something like human trafficking without people just immediately, like we've said before, just immediately building walls?
Circuit breaker.
It is abuse prevention.
Yes.
And we don't care if you're 5 or 95. A 7-year-old takes off the headset and he goes, oh, I get it. They trick you.
Yes.
Thank you, son.
Yeah.
$500,000 later, I sure appreciate your wisdom. You know, we had an 8-year-old that said, it's like, what did you like? What did you not like? And she said, I hated every minute she was trapped. I was only happy when she was free. Then another 8-year-old girl steps up in there. What did you like best? What did you like least? She said, I don't know. This situation is soulless. Lumpy is soulless. I don't know about you, but I didn't.
Wow.
And she answered, she answered that exact thing for both the good and the bad. I don't know. It's soulless. The predator is soulless. And you're like, well, I wish I had something better to tell you before you leave my booth.
Yeah.
But you pretty much nailed it. It's soulless.
Well, and that's just it. But
But that's literally why you're called radical imperfection.
And 8 years old. Yeah, and 8 years old.
That's it. Yeah.
That's it.
We are trying. So for listeners that may not know enough about us, and you haven't had a chance to get on reefcares.org and dig into us and look at all of the videos and read more and find out about our product, we are busy trying to teach people how to stay safe, period, bar none. Whether it's online through the internet, whether it is through a relationship, whether it's through domestic violence, or if it's elder abuse or anything like that, we went out and we did the research to find out what it was about abuse prevention education that was working and what was not working. And what works is having an emotional avatar so that you feel like you have a connection to the topic. Yeah. So a lot of people who work in this field, it turns out that it's a parent or a family member or themselves that have had dealt with some type of abuse and they got interested in the topic. Well, what we did was we created a virtual reality situation so you could actually learn more about this from an emotional, caring perspective so that you live the red flags, you live the vulnerabilities, you see exactly what that feels like. And that actually really gets the message across to our trainees. And so they finished the VR training, and they had spent about 20 minutes with a survivor who told them how this happened to her, how it can happen to anybody, specifically how it occurred. And one of the things that's absolutely incredible about it is that it really does give them that emotional connection. And we see this constantly with our users. So Chris just pulled it up so you can see that this is the inside of the hotel room, the condo that she's being kept in by her trafficker. And she has, we're trying to convey her psychological thought processes. She's like, she was only in eighth grade. Some of the books don't make a lot of sense. I don't think I'm stupid like Lumpy says, but I'm not sure. I'm really confused. So we're trying to put you in her mindset, her emotional mindset.
So you can think about what she thinks, but then also compare that to how you yourself think.
Yeah.
We're not telling you how to think. We're telling you what her experience is.
Absolutely.
And allowing you to think, how would I feel in that situation? How would I be, you know, how would I? You know, could that happen to me? Could that, you know, and because it's from the voice of a 14-year-old, children that are younger look up to the 12-year-old, peers listen, and parents are not intimidated to listen to a story.
No, they're much more willing to listen.
Adults are much more willing to listen to a 14-year-old talk.
Absolutely. And, you know, especially whenever you're talking about this kind of topic, the shame that is oriented with it. The idea that a friend of yours at school may be going through this and you have no idea. It's fascinating to think about that, and also kind of horrifying to know that, once again, it's that close.
88% of human trafficking victims are taken to a doctor during the time they are being trafficked.
Wow.
And the doctors are not screening for it. And we've spoken to a lot of people that graduate medical school, and you can graduate as a doctor or a nurse having never had one class on human trafficking.
Wow.
Usually what happens in their first year of training, they have to go online and take a class on human trafficking. They go through a point and click, you know, multiple choice questionnaire, and
where they've got a 25% chance every question right.
And a lot of times the training in this field is as simple as you watch a video and you go to a website and type in a word from that video, and that's proving that you learned something.
Well, and even the idea of, once again, seeing these things pop up, like, and questioning them, because of course when you're dealing with people who've been through trauma, things like that, the unloaded question is important. But the great thing is, this is an emotional avatar.
That's so right.
You can ask any pointed question you want after, and there is no regret. There is no, like, my God, there's no problem with saying, my God, how did this happen to you? How did you let this happen?
Right.
Instead, you get to process that while they're going through it. Literally.
That's right.
And you get your question answered by them. Because that's one of the things we watch.
In context, real time, while it's happening.
Exactly.
Like walking you through this, how this happened.
And I can appreciate that because my wife, for example, has a lot of questions whenever we watch documentaries about cults, things like that. I have none. I have no question. I firmly understand how every single person in that cult got there.
Agreed.
I was ready to wear a collar for the rest of my life because of my belief. Because of my belief system, and where that did. Now, I'm not saying the Catholic Church is a cult. Not by any way, shape, or form. I think that there are some cultist sides to it and some cults within it.
Why not?
You know? No different than American politics. I think that there are some cults within it. Is the whole thing a cult? No. However, you've definitely, there are those extreme mentalities within all of it.
Right.
You know, there's an extreme mentality for somebody looking for such forgiveness that they think wearing a cilice around their thigh during the day is the answer. The answer to me getting over my sin and my want to sin is wearing this barbed bracelet around my thigh during the day.
Yeah.
That's how I get over it. That's how I get past it.
And they showed you come up with some ideas.
It's wild stuff.
My goodness.
But it's one of those, once again, a faction within it, not the whole thing. So it's that... To bring this conversation full circle, it is that want of confirmation married with the suspension of disbelief.
I would say that it's important to understand that if the answer to, do you have feelings, do you have any feelings whatsoever?
Yeah.
If you do, you're vulnerable.
That's it.
And if you think that, you know, and if you're hungry and I have a cheeseburger,
that's right.
I'm a little bit more vulnerable. And I might be a mean person, and tomorrow I bet you're going to be more hungry.
Well, and if you've got an addictive personality married with that hunger, married with that want, married with that want of belonging or that want of confirmation of what you believe or what you're searching for in a greater way in your life, you're even more vulnerable.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And unfortunately, I hate to tell you, Stoics, you're vulnerable too.
Yeah. There's no end to it. You know.
There is none. There is none.
But we need people to understand that when they realize they're being tricked, or when it feels like your emotions are being used against you,
investigate.
Ask questions.
If you don't get help, continue asking until you do get the help you need.
Well, and the day, much like I used to tell every single one of my junior high and high school kids I taught every year, the day you stop asking questions, you should be dead.
Nobody would do that.
You should no longer be breathing.
Ernie taught us that a long time ago.
Exactly.
Well, Ernie says the best way to learn things is to ask questions.
And that's just it, though, is the day that asking a question becomes something bad in your life.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
It should be red flares shooting in the air. Not even a flag being raised like a poncho's. Right. It should be flares shooting in the air. For some reason, it's not okay for me to ask a question.
Or secrets, bad secrets. Yeah. Bad secrets.
Or good secrets.
You know, that saved our children.
Yeah.
We didn't know anything about that. But in my family, there was a lot of secrets.
Yeah.
That most of them are still not known, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And the predator is a high standing person in the society. You know, and so I had told my children, no bad secrets. If it makes you feel bad, you run through me.
That's right.
You know, for any reason. It doesn't matter why it makes you feel bad or how the variety of bad you feel.
Yeah.
You know, set that alarm off.
Exactly. And you know, it's...
That includes your boss. That includes your boyfriend.
That includes
somebody in an interview.
Yeah.
When you're trying to get a job that is showing you the company culture.
Yes.
You know, you just want to... You have to be vigilant all the time.
Well, all too sadly, so many people are programmed not to ask questions, just to accept, to blithely move through society, and to belong.
Or they are forbidden from asking questions because they know that if they ask questions, they're going to lose their job, they're going to lose their relationship, they're going to lose their standing, they're going to lose their whatever it is. So whenever questioning things becomes bad, alarm bells should be going off.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And that's to bring this conversation full circle, that's exactly the path of the narcissist. That's what they want. They want ultimate control over you. They want ultimate control over what you think, what you feel, why you think it, why you feel it.
They want to live
They are accurately understanding your feelings.
They are filing it for later use to get something else they'll want later. That is actually probably the most horrifying thing of all of it, Jacqueline, is that nobody gets you better than the narcissist.
Yes, they are.
Like, horrifyingly enough.
And also,
they have performed a psychological survey of exactly who you are and what makes you tick. They use it at the beginning
to be the most unimaginably wonderful boyfriend, the best boss you ever had.
Yep.
That is the love bombing stage. And as good as they are at that, they are 10x better at using that to make you miserable.
And yes.
Get what they want.
Yes. Horribly enough, nice guys, I'm going to look right at you in the camera right now. Horribly enough, nice guys, it does not make it easy for us.
Yeah.
It does not. Because we're actually nice guys. Like, ain't no front, ain't no love bombing. If I'm telling you I love you, it's because I actively love you,
right.
You know?
Right.
Like us nice guys kind of get caught up in the rap of all these horrible people.
And that part about not asking for a check at the end of I love you, that's nice too.
So it's frightening to see exactly how you, even the example I give all the time is, feel free to watch a Disney movie that has programmed our ladies, that has programmed our women. Like, and once again, not a show about how horrible Disney movies are. But when you look at the psychology of Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Snow White,
like Beauty and
how
the Beast.
How many people are going to be kissed in their sleep and it's okay?
Right. Beauty and the Beast.
This stranger who comes and finds you and loves you while you're asleep is the one you're supposed to end up with the rest of your life.
Right.
Yeah, that's not healthy.
That's messed up. A messed up quality. However, once again, fully lifted from the stories from the 1600s that they come from.
Certainly.
You know, so this is a pattern that has sadly been ingrained in women across cultures, across time, is the idea of these things, is the idea of the, what does the man think? What does the man think?
That really is.
These are the horrible patterns that we have to break.
Texas is about to change the law to where I will no longer be registered to vote because I chose to take my husband's name 27 years ago.
Yeah.
I've used it consistently for 27 years. And I would have to get a certified birth certificate, a certified marriage license. Yeah. I have to take those two documents to a third person I would need to pay to stamp them. I also need to buy a passport. I have to pay for a picture for a passport that amounts to a $300 to $500 poll tax.
Pretty much.
That is a poll tax.
Yep. If you have to have those things in order to.
No, you do. Yeah. That is the. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes. Yeah. No different than. I mean, it is. I believe 67 million women will just automatically be bumped off the rolls.
Off the polling.
And they will not be reinstated without those documents. They will no longer accept a state ID. And if you've ever gotten one here in Texas, that requires about four different documents.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's pretty strict to get your Texas ID. And now, you know, that is $300 to $500.
Yeah.
Worth and how many hours of work to contact the state I'm from, contact the state of Texas, you know, the hospital where I was born. Like, really?
Yeah, it's wild. And, you know, when you start looking at all of these things, especially in the way that narcissism once again comes into play with all these things. It's wild. It's very interesting. It's, and once again, traumatic for a lot of people. I want to thank you guys for everything that y'all do at Reef, for everything that you do at Radical Lift, the Education Foundation.
Well, thank you.
It is amazing. I've loved the fact that y'all are peeling back other onion skins that relate to human trafficking, because I as we've talked privately,
it really is a spectrum. It's a spectrum that goes from a cookie through domestic, child abuse, domestic violence.
Absolutely.
It's just an entire spectrum.
Yeah.
And
no different than
of somebody using your feelings against you.
No different than the spectrum of ASD or anything like that, of autism disorders. And knowing the fact that, yes, it's no longer a diagnosis to be Asperger's. You're now just high functioning ASD.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the autism spectrum.
There you are.
Is what you are. You're just on the spectrum now. But it's interesting to see how that spectrum definition in that kind of way has really broadened things, broadened psychological understanding, and I think broadened a lot of empathy from doctors, where you don't necessarily have to have that hard diagnosis that you used to have in order to get somebody some help. So that's good in some ways, I think. And it's fascinating to see how these things affect the facets of our society, and how we once again have these conversations with our children and broach the conversations with our children, because I think sadly too many people think that an 8-year-old cannot process this. And
a five-year-old can do it easily. My five-year-old did.
Yeah. My 4-year-old did.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
From the day my son has stood at a toilet to pee, which was only once. It took once.
That's right. Yeah.
Literally.
Start sitting down.
It took once.
There you go.
Where it was like, oh.
Oh, really?
Oh.
He just got it.
So you feel the need to use the bathroom? Yeah. Come here and let me show you something, buddy. And in that same conversation of let me show you how to use the toilet like a big boy instead of using your training seat, because you just felt it.
Right.
You just felt
like it was going to happen.
You recognized your body and what your body needed to do. So let's have that conversation and let's start talking about that. It's never been called anything but a penis.
That's right.
Ever.
Yep.
Ever.
Yeah. And it also drastically increases the chances that your child will not become a victim. They understand that it's called that. When a predator starts calling it something different, starts making, saying things
that will make you feel oogie now.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
calling it something else feels different than calling it by the same thing your doctor does.
That's right.
And the other thing is that if something happens to you, if you have the correct names that you use, you can report it accurately.
Exactly.
I can't even tell you how many people that we have talked to that did not even understand that there was a name for that part of their body. Mm-hmm. They just were like, that's just my lap.
Yeah, that's my winky.
Yes.
Or whatever.
And that gets them in a lot of trouble.
And male or female, folks, that's just it. It's the fact of talking about your sexuality, talking about the part of your, literally the part of your anatomy.
It's not even your sexuality. It's your anatomy.
It's your anatomy.
Whatever anatomy you have, it's still your anatomy.
Exactly. And being in touch with that, being in touch with your anatomy is what leads to being in touch with yourself, being in touch with your sexuality, being in whatever that is.
And being in touch with anyone who is making you feel icky on purpose.
That's right.
If you suspect it's on purpose, it is on purpose.
You can just about guarantee it's on purpose.
Safest bet at the casino. That person, it feels like you're doing it on purpose. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's just it. It's the idea that we all have motivations. We all have things that are there. And sadly and horribly, the people that are motivated to do these things are motivated in horrifying.
They are professionals. This is their job. Yeah. I cannot be more clear. This is their profession.
Yeah.
Their chosen profession, and they're very good at it.
Jackie, I normally ask this question of Billy, but it's your first time in the hot seat and your first time on the show. What advice would you give to parents out there right now that are listening, people, grandparents, anybody? What advice, if you had one piece of advice to give them from this show tonight, what would it be?
Constant supervision of a very limited phone until the child is much older. I believe that it's worth the investment for you to buy your mother a less complex phone. Mm-hmm. She'll probably like it more. It will probably do, you know, 10x what she needs it to do. You know, because the people that don't know how to operate the phones, they're the most vulnerable because they click on everything.
That's right.
You know, and so the less availability, you know, really it comes down to that, you know, you believe that you are giving your child access to the internet. And what you are, in fact, doing is giving the entire internet access to your child.
Exactly. Exactly. I could not have said that better. Amen to that.
Amen. That's right.
Billy, you know you aren't getting out of here without that question.
Well, you know, I like Jackie's answer because, you know, that really is that's a way to stop it. But if we can get people to understand that their feelings are the thing that can be tricked and get them to be honest about that. I think that is...
And that doesn't make them stupid. That's why it's called tricked.
Yes.
They tricked you because they are just a professional. That's what they do for a living.
That's right.
You don't feel bad because the plumber knows more about the sink than you do. And professional, especially narcissistic predators, understand your feelings even better than you frankly. I mean, just from an outside, how they can take advantage of it thing, they understand how to take advantage of your feelings way more than you understand how you are vulnerable.
It is no different than a professional card player.
Absolutely. Yeah. They could either count cards or mark them, or
they don't even need to know the cards.
And you don't stand a chance.
They know how to play you at the table.
Yes, you stand no chance.
That's right.
You stand no chance with someone who has created a skill and communication with a narcissist. A lot of times they have someone near them, like a spouse or a girlfriend. And to be very clear, narcissists pick the best. They pick the best of the best. They don't, what you don't realize is you don't need them. They need you.
Yeah.
They don't really know how to act like a normal person or have they don't have normal emotions. They don't have sadness. So they fake what you're doing.
Yeah.
They stand next to you and they're your husband and they're like, oh, my wife's upset. Yes. Well, I better be upset too.
You are their beard.
Yes, you are their beard. Yeah, you are their emotional beard.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. And the you know, amazing human beings, like of every level, fall for these people because we all have feelings.
And once again, not just human trafficking, not just abuse. This goes into communities of belief.
Yep.
This goes into communities of experience, all kinds of things. It's very, very easy for somebody to say, yeah, that happened to me too. And the example I give regularly on the show is Corey Good, who for years said that, you know, he had these off-planet experiences, was taken to Mars and took place in space battles and regressed by age by 20 years to come back and had this experience with blue avians to the point that people shook his hand at conferences and said, that happened to me too. This is a deposition all of a year and a half ago, about 9 hours long, very revealing, where he's saying anybody who said that happened to them is delusional. The blue avians are my meditation guides. Nobody's ever met them. So while these people are shaking their hands and saying, I had that experience too, and you said, my God, thank God we're simpatico and like we get each other, right? You're just as delusional and leading them down the road of delusion to make money. It's where all of these things come from. So, like, it is during, for any of you questioning why this show is talking about this topic tonight, that's why. This is in direct relation to our communities and what they're about.
I think the most important thing my therapist was ever able to get through after an embarrassingly long time was that the persons that in my life that were narcissistic, she finally got it through to me. There's no bottom.
No.
It's you that has a bottom,
That's
not
right.
them.
Yep.
You're the one that has standards and boundaries. They have none.
They have none.
They have none. They're willing to go. They're,
Zero compulsion.
You're willing to go all the way. They're willing to go twice that far.
That's right. They're willing to go exactly
There's
as far as you are.
Absolutely no bottom whatsoever. They don't care that you kill yourself. They don't care if you walk in and kill your brother if they can make $5 more. They just have no bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolute truth. Guys, thank you all so much, as always, for coming on the show. Billy, thank you.
It's been a delight. We sure do appreciate it.
It's been right at a decade, man.
It
just blows my mind.
10 years, dude.
How long?
Unbelievable, right?
So to see your journey, both of y'all, with this is absolutely beautiful. It's great. Let everybody know where they can go to help with Reef, where they can go to get involved, where they can go to find more about Reef Cares.
So the best place to go, the central location is reefcares.org, reefcares.org. If you want to help us out through some money, hey, donate. If you want to learn, we have a blog. You can click on the blog thing up there. We'll take you. It's called Beyond the Red Flags. I think it's under News and Info.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have here is this is our weekly blog. We put out something every week about some type of abuse, whether it's elderly abuse, whether it's emotional abuse, or whether it's abuse that's happening at your company.
And please, if you would like to
recognize it, do something about it.
If you would like to ask for a topic, we're more than open to any kind of, write us and you can call.
And let's talk about where we're going to be in a couple of weeks.
That's right.
We are going to be at the Lone Star Festival, which is a big writer's event. And so since our app is really a completely immersive, interactive writing experience and enjoyable experience.
It's really about all kinds of just storytelling.
Yeah.
Whether you tell it in a frame or bound in a book or with an instrument, it is about storytelling. And our story is meant to make you just be aware. If it doesn't feel good, you don't need to know why.
That's right.
You don't need to know why.
Never even need to quantify why something doesn't feel good to you.
Yeah. Just step back before anything.
That's right.
Step the hell back.
Start talking to people. Start explaining how your emotions are making you feel. Start talking about this person that's making you feel funny. And if you don't have anybody else to talk to, if you can't find somebody local, write us. We'll help you find somebody.
That's our
job. Our job is to help people find safe resources so they can work through their own issues.
Yep.
I also think every episode on the internet currently with the administration that we have, there's a new service in America that is 988. There is 911. And we went to a conference and we had participants from 3 to 25 and we told them situations and we said, would you call 911 or you call 988, which is the new suicide and mental health crisis hotline.
Yeah.
And Billy told me they didn't get it. They couldn't wait to answer. And then Billy's saying, I don't know if they got it or not. And a 7-year-old rides her bike by and she goes, 911. If I break my arm, 988. If I get too sad.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's our new logo. that's the whole new thing.
Well,
and they have also just recently added 988. And if you push 1, it will go to the veterans.
Fantastic.
But post it everywhere. Talk to your kids about it. And with the state of healthcare in America, if you have a problem, you need to work through.
Yep.
You know, don't let it get to suicide. Call 988 and tell them I'm having a huge personal issue.
They're not going to ask you, are you suicidal right now, and hang up on you if you say no.
They are not going to do that.
They are going to work with you. They prefer it if you call before you are suicidal.
That's right. And it's much easier to handle the situation.
There's nothing wrong with asking for help. And are free resources out there. If you can't find them on your own, you can't find them by typing the internet, write us.
Exactly.
We will help.
Well, guys, thank you so much for your time tonight. Thank you so much for your time. Always, Billy, especially with everything that you guys do, with everything with Radical Empathy Education Foundation. While you are online checking out everything from reefcares.org, everybody, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can like, follow, subscribe. That is where you can find all of the episodes. That's where you can find our free app. If you're a Roku user, stop on by, download our free app. All kinds of great content there. Thank you so much, everybody, for your time tonight. It is your open hearts, your open minds that make the conversation, and without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media family of podcasts. For more shows and members-only content, visit groundzeroplus.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious, and remember, the other side is always watching.